Let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle.
I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the greats check, too, okay? Because we'll get the punch on third and short. Even 51 greats.
And the rest of the NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go.
Just seems a little bit different today. And the reason I say that is because maybe this week, and I think I mentioned this on Tuesday's show. By the way, welcome inside the playbook for Thursday. It just seems like I didn't have as much internal bickering with myself. I don't know, my many multiple personalities over the Patriots and their chance for this Sunday. I felt pretty confident all week long, in spite of Denver's 4-0 record, that the Patriots would win this game and have a shot at least at winning it going away. I don't think that they will. I think Denver will make a game of it. I agree with Paul Perillo's assessment at the end of PFW in Progress that I think Denver will make this a game, but I think the Patriots will probably score late to give them, you know, a two-score cushion, and Denver won't have a shot. You know, so that's kind of the way I'm thinking about Sunday. But as we always do on Thursdays, we want your take. We want your take on the game. So send us your score predictions, web radio, at Patriots.com. You can also call the program at 508-543-7482 and let us know your thoughts, how you think it may break down, any concerns that you might have, and we'll run it through the ringer. Eric Scalavino from Patriots Football Weekly joins us as he usually does.
What's up, John?
How be the week? Everything all right?
Not bad. Going by fast as always. These good NFL weeks, when you start them on a Wednesday, you know, the work week, the Monday is really a Wednesday.
It makes the week fly
it
by,
makes
though,
the entire
doesn't?
Week yeah. fly by. Having yeah. the random Tuesdays off is phenomenal.
Awesome.
I love it.
Awesome. You know what? There are some advantages to having that. When I worked weekend sports at a television station in San Antonio for a number of years, I had Monday and Tuesday off.
Mm-hmm.
And so I worked Wednesday through Sunday. It was a great schedule. I mean, it wasn't great sometimes with the family life because of kids and all that stuff, but as far as pure work,
yep.
having Monday and Tuesday off during the middle of the week, because I had to work weekends anyway. I was anchoring, so I would go out during the day and I would cover games.
Mm-hmm.
Or on Saturdays, best yet, I'd travel to like Austin or College Station and cover football games, which was outstanding.
So it's not really work.
No, it was great. Are you kidding me? And so I basically only had 3 days in the office, quote unquote, 3 days in the office, and I'd spend my time, you know, basically traveling, prepping for that weekend's football. So I mean, it was just
sounds like our job.
I've got to tell you, it was many years ago. The money wasn't always great, but it, you know, for somebody who was still young in his professional career, it was a hell of a gig.
Mm-hmm.
Nice gig.
Sure is.
Sometimes, you know, things are so difficult now. I wish I could just dial it back to the days when things were just simpler. I had one person to go to. I had one master. But, you know, hey, that's the way it works. So right now, you know, a guy on the other side of the glass here is my master. So what can I tell you?
You're in trouble.
I know.
Damn Skippy.
You're in big trouble.
That's exactly right. But we like it. Like I said, Eric, I haven't had too many important concerns about the game. And again, I say that with all due respect to Denver, because what I, you know, and we spent quite a bit of time, you know, breaking down the show yesterday and then talking to Mark Johnson from KOA Radio in Denver yesterday and, you know, getting some of his take on how these guys are developing. I got the overall impression from talking to Mark, though, and we'll get into this with Mike Kliss from the Denver Post in the second hour of the program today. But I got the impression that they all feel like they're kind of, this is all gravy to them. This is all icing on the cake that, you know, they didn't expect to quite start out this way under Josh McDaniels, especially the way that the McDaniels era began with the whole Brandon Marshall, you know, fiasco. Or not the whole Brandon Marshall fiasco, the whole Jay Cutler thing. And then the Brandon Marshall thing on top of that.
And they didn't play well in the preseason.
And they did not play well in the preseason. And yet they started 4-0. They've had a great schedule to start the season. And I think they're all realizing that that certainly is a huge factor. Although the Cincinnati win may be a little better for them. And even the Dallas win could even be better by the end of the year. But, you know, they're kind of like, hey, we're kind of living on borrowed time. We know that. We just want to be competitive. And Mark said something very telling yesterday, which convinces me that I think the Patriots should be, as long as they don't turn the ball over four times, which, you know, can be death here. But on the road, forget about it, you know, unless you're forcing the other team four turnovers. You commit four, you're dead on the road, generally speaking. But the telling comment that he had had to do with sticking around with San Diego, because San Diego was the general consensus in the AFC West. Would you agree with that? Pick going into the season to win the division. Mm-hmm. In fact, I remember first week of the season, we're all talking about, you know, San Diego has a shot at best record in the AFC because their schedule.
By default,
because of their schedule and because they play everybody else in the West twice.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, the thought was is they could go 5-1, 6-0 real easy right there. And San Diego stumbled out of the gates to the points now where, you know, North Turner's getting nervous. A.J. Smith, the general manager, he's gnashing his teeth and twiddling his thumbs, and he's coming out and he's saying, we're going to make some changes. They even started, you know, reading the riot act to some of the guys on the defensive side this week. And if you believe everything you read in, like, you know, Pro Football Talk and all that stuff, Sean Merriman, a guy like Sean Merriman's potentially on the trading block.
Yep.
Did you see that today?
Oh, we did. Were
you talking
around,
about it?
We bounced it around a little bit on the
Would
show.
Would you take him?
I have to try to separate this, my personal views of the guy versus him as a player.
Yeah.
I don't want anything to do with him. I think he's a bad person.
Okay.
I wouldn't want anything to do with him. As a player, strictly from an on-field standpoint, I think he'd be an improvement over what they have.
I don't think there's any doubt in my mind. But you have to enter into the equation, character. You know, and how the Patriots have always dealt with guys of questionable character.
Right.
Some they have shunned altogether, Christian Peter.
Mm-hmm.
And others they have rehabilitated, Corey Dillon, Randy Moss.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows, right? So I guess.
But this guy's case is a little different, where they'd be picking him up in the last year of his contract.
Yeah.
Expected to be a free agent at the end of the year. Are they just renting him for a few games?
What's wrong with that?
No, I'm just saying. I'm just saying it's different. It's a different
circumstance. I think if you could just rent Merriman for the last two-thirds of this season, that'd be brilliant. Because you're not planning on keeping the guy around anyway, are you?
I think it all depends on how he plays.
What would you have to give up for him?
Well, there's the question. Andy was saying, you could throw in a fifth and you could get him. I thought that.
That may be too low.
I couldn't see San Diego accepting only a fifth for him.
No.
I think it would have to be higher than
that. You'd have to give him
maybe a third.
Probably a third. And don't the Patriots have a good amount of middle-round draft picks that they've been stocking up?
I know they gave away a few lower-round ones for guys that didn't end up making the team, but I think they might have at least a third that they
could
throw
around. Well, I think they probably have
there.
A third they could throw around, number one. So, to me, from a purely football perspective, and I'm going to get back to the original point. I'm sorry, but you know me. I like to digress here because I always think of interesting things off the top. It's how we work here, baby. We fly off the handle.
Live radio.
That's right.
Unless you listen to it on the podcast.
there you go. I can see people at home going, stick to point! I'm trying, but this is too fun to talk about. Listen, from a pure football perspective, you got to take a flyer. You just have to. Whether you're 3-4 or 4-3, I mean, you know, first of all, I think Merriman would have an interest because he knows the Patriots be in position to win a ring. San Diego may not be, depending upon whatever else happens with this team, and the fact that North Turner could easily be gone before this year is over. He may be gone certainly after the year is over. So the uncertainty in San Diego is going to continue to percolate.
Right.
He could remove himself from that equation. He can concentrate on making an impact here and then set himself up for an uncapped year.
Yeah.
Potential uncapped year.
If
you could get San Diego to bite on a third-round pick, do it! Do it! Do it! Do it!
I think you're right. I think that would be too tempting an offer to pass up on either side.
Make the move.
And you know, it's the same conference but different divisions. So
it's not like
he'd be going from like the
this
Jets.
This would be
to
a
the,
great you know. Answer to the Jets picking up Braylon Edwards. Honest to God. I mean, that would be just a super response. Everybody's waiting for the Patriots to make a response, you know, because the Jets picked up a big play receiver. Oh, what are we going to do? Well, first of all, the guy's got hands of stone now. So, you know, I think people in Cleveland were ready to ditch him anyway.
And I think this Patriots secondary has been playing better.
I don't think that's going to be as bad or as good for the Jets as people think it's going to be. I think the Patriots can handle Braylon Edwards, but that's on down the line. I'm just saying though that the perception would be that the Jets and the Patriots are tussling back and forth here in the AFC East. This would send a fantastic message, like we're going to kick some serious butt.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this would send the message to the Jets, to the league. And I know these guys don't care about sending messages. They just, you know,
they do what's best for their football team.
Yes, and this to me, Now, again, I don't know that San Diego would go for a third-round pick. I don't know. But in the last year of his contract, if San Diego decides they're going to clean house and they don't want to bring him back, they'd be stupid not to take a third.
I agree. I think that's about the right, because he was playing at a high level before the injury and before the whole steroid or, you know, enhanced.
Is he healthy right now?
I think he's healthy enough to play, but I don't know if they've been getting the production out of him they wanted.
That's the key word, production, because that's what A.J. Smith has been griping about to the media.
Right.
And I've been reading up on over the last couple of days, and they said they're talking about wholesale changes, including Merriman.
But you have to wonder if that's a function of his injury and all of his past problems.
Might be.
Or if it's a matter of he's already given up on club and the coach.
That would be have to be a determination by Bill Belichick and Nick Caserio and whomever else would be involved mm-hmm. here. But if they can determine that he still has some value and that physically he's okay to play, given their reputation here for quote-unquote rehabbing problem children, mm-hmm. man, why the hell not?
And he's an East Coast guy.
Yes.
So, you know, might be, I mean,
ding,
as,
ding,
as
ding,
much
ding.
As great a city as San Diego is, he might be more comfortable being closer to home. Who
why not?
Knows?
So, why not? Yeah, he's a Maryland guy. So it's, why not? Okay, let me get back to the original point now. I was talking about Denver and their perception here. They're thinking, you know, all right, they're 4-0. San Diego's 2-2. And the telling comment that I had from Mark Johnson, are you impressed at all, by the way, that I remembered my original point?
Yes.
Okay. Very good. See?
I think you might have had it written down.
No, I don't have. What do I have? What do I have written here? Come on, Eric. What do I have written here?
You
nothing.
Might have something stuck up your sleeve over there, cheating on a test.
I have things stuck up other places, but that's not one of them. Up my sleeve? No. The deal is that I just gleaned from their comments yesterday, from Mark's comments yesterday, that they feel fortunate, and that if they are in the mix somewhere on down the line, say by week 10, 12, and beyond, mm-hmm. they'd be very happy, consider this a step up, because of where they were last year. They'd mm-hmm. be, you know, in the playoff mix. They would have a chance, and he mentioned this specifically yesterday, they would have a chance to be a playoff team and even to win that division. I don't think a wild card's coming out of that division. I just don't think it's going to happen.
Oh, no. Not with the talent in the other conference.
Wild card will come from either here or the north, I think, would be my logical conclusion, don't
yeah,
you think?
Yeah, I think it'll be a battle between the other three.
Yeah.
I think, potentially, if Houston can turn things around, I think they're in the mix. But
they might
they're,
be,
they're,
but I'd say that's iffy. I still think
Jacksonville's
been
playing
better
than we expected.
You
I still
what?
Think Indy's going to win that conference.
Yes.
So I think it's up. It's the other three divisions
Jacksonville
who are fighting
game,
for the two spots.
That Jacksonville game here in December could be big for Jacksonville.
Yeah, it could be.
It could be huge for Jacksonville. But we're getting way ahead of ourselves. I think that the wild card stands to come out of the East and the North. That's my
Yeah, most likely.
Yeah,
you would think.
But Denver being happy to be where they are.
Yep.
This is gravy for them. This is all really good. As long as they can avoid like a 4 or 5 game losing streak, I think they'd still be overall happy with the progress that Josh McDaniels is making. And that being in the mix to be included is sort of maybe a year or two even ahead of schedule.
Especially when you consider that so many Broncos fans were on the verge of calling for his head in August.
Right.
After all that had transpired in the offseason, getting rid of the best quarterback, thinking about getting rid of their best wide receiver. The way he handled both of those situations, then not performing well in the preseason, looking terrible, actually,
mm-hmm.
and then coming out with that miracle win against the Bengals in Cincinnati in week one, I think you're right. People are sort of looking at it like, hey, we're 4-0, let's take it while we can. But now here come the Patriots, McDaniel's former team, intriguing matchup on both sides of the ball, with both head coaches. I just think Josh is going to be a little too overmatched in this game. Right, you know, soon into his tenure as a head coach.
We did come up with the number yesterday, and I think this was right after you left. But Belichick against proteges as head coaches in the NFL. He's 5-2 against Mangini.
Okay. So it was an overall thing.
Yes,
it was
an overall.
First time.
But we have that number too.
Okay.
He's 5-2 against Mangini.
Yep.
He's 2-2 against Nick Saban, who has now since gone back to the colleges.
Okay. Yeah, I totally forgot about him.
And he's 1-0 against Romeo.
Yep.
That's it as far as head coaches in the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
So that's an overall record of 8-4.
Mm-hmm.
No, 7-4. 8-4.
8-4.
8-4, right.
8-4.
And so Josh, obviously would also enter that equation. But in terms of first-time matchups with a protege?
3-0.
3-0. Yeah. 3-0.
Yeah, I couldn't remember him ever losing to
he
it.
He hasn't.
No.
3-0.
Not right off the bat.
So, you know, a win over Josh would make him 4-0 in that particular mm-hmm. game. First-time matchups.
Yep. But 8-4, pretty good, too.
Yeah,
you
well,
win two out of three against people that you know.
That know you. That means that you're doing at least a fair amount of adjusting and trying to throw new wrinkles into the equation, which I fully expect mm-hmm. the Patriots to do this week.
And, you know, it's funny you mentioned that. Tom Brady said something yesterday in his press conference that I thought was revealing. It was sort of a throwaway line, but I picked up on it because when we played the Jets week two and they went with the grease board and the flip cards on the arm to totally throw off the way mm-hmm. they usually call their plays, we were all saying here internally that it had to be because of the Kevin O'Connell factor. They brought him in. He knows the offense well enough. He can give the Jets information. And to combat that, they had this new way of calling the plays. We just, you know, to us, that's how we rationalized it. And Brady, sort of in a comment about knowing McDaniels and how he knows the players here and the offense, sort of said, well, yeah, you know, we've dealt with that before. You saw what we did because of Kevin in week two.
Mm-hmm.
So he basically validated the fact that they one player going to another team, granted it's a quarterback who has a, you know, in-depth knowledge of the offense, but one player making that much of an effect against the Patriots. Now you're playing not only a coach, but several players on offense, albeit backups for the most part, and a guy or two on defense who's familiar with this team. I think it's just going to be an incredible game as far as new wrinkles that we're going to see.
Yeah,
we mentioned it yesterday, but you know, based on what Brady said, I think that's pretty telling.
We're going to see some different stuff.
A lot of more so than you would normally see in a game.
I would think so. So I think that certainly gives us all reason to, you know, not that we wouldn't tune in already, but certainly gives us, you know, some intrigue to follow and see what kind of new wrinkles that you might, you know, recognize from both teams. I mean, Josh has already introduced, you know, multiple defensive fronts and things like that at Denver, much like the Patriots had done defensively. And mm-hmm. I'm sure we'll see that from Denver on Sunday, where they'll sometimes have one or two down linemen and the rest backers or defensive backs, or, you know, they'll do some different things. They'll give the Patriots some looks.
Quick little tangent related to this topic, though. Did you happen to see any of the highlights of the Notre Dame game this past weekend?
Yes.
Did you see the New England Patriots offense in full effect? There was a play, I'm not sure if it was a two-point conversion or if it was an actual score. I think it might have been a conversion.
You're talking about the game against Washington?
Yeah.
Okay.
They lined up shotgun formation. They had the back next to Clawson.
Yeah.
They snapped it to the back, and Clawson
did the old
arms up in the air.
The old Brady play.
Yeah, I mean, it's just funny when you watch Notre Dame because it's exactly like watching the Patriots offense.
That was
the exact same plays. That's definitely a Charlie
Weiss.
I saw that, and I'm like, oh, that's a Kevin Falk play right there. You know, and it worked.
Yeah, it worked. Yeah,
and it worked.
Yeah,
but that's just, you know, it's funny.
Yeah,
when
that's right.
Seeing similarities in the offense.
Yeah.
You watch Notre Dame and you see it all the time.
Speaking of Charlie, I don't think he lasts past this year. I'm not convinced.
Oh, I don't know. I think Clawson's helping save his job right now.
I don't know. I mean, unless they get to a BCS game, and this is totally off topic here, but unless they get to a BCS level game, a high side bowl game, there's a lot of pressure at Notre Dame.
Oh, sure. But
a lot of pressure.
I think the way they're playing right now is he's a lot safer than he was 2 months ago.
Well,
a month ago.
A month ago, maybe. I'll give you that. But he's got to, you know, if they go and get clocked by USC, look out. You'll hear the fire Charlie stuff happening all over again. Now, if they beat USC, well, all bets are off the table. Looks mm-hmm. like, you know, he's in pretty good shape. But he still has to go, I think. I think, you know, I don't think 10-2 will do it. I'm not sure 10-2 gets Notre Dame into a BCS game.
But I think that'll save his job.
Yeah, 10-2 will save the job. But 10-2, see, Notre Dame's deal is they have to finish in the top eight in the rankings to get a BCS game.
Mm-hmm.
And 10-2, I don't think I'll have them in the top eight.
I don't know. This year, John, there are a lot of teams who are very competitive, and there's not one really dominant team.
I think you could make a case for, you know, LSU, Alabama, Florida, and Auburn, because Auburn is still undefeated right now. You could make a case for all of those schools being ranked ahead. You got Texas. You have.
But they have to play to each other, most of them, right?
Some of them do, yes. You have Texas. You have Boise State. I mean, there's six teams right now. Six teams right now that deserve to be ranked ahead. Now, not all of those SEC teams will be ahead, but probably, you know, two or three of them will stay ahead because of strength of schedule. I'm just saying,
I like Boise State.
It will be very difficult. And don't forget the Fighting Horned Frogs from Texas
TCU.
Christian.
Yep.
Okay, because if they beat BYU and who else is in that league? Utah. Thank you, mm-hmm. Utah. If they beat Utah,
me.
I just thought of it myself because I keep it's very hard for me to get used to TCU being in the Mountain West.
Yeah.
You know? But at any rate, if they win that league and TCU's undefeated. TCU is going to be in that top five, and mm-hmm. they'll be in the mix.
Sure.
Another team that could run the table.
Which is why, John, we need a playoff system.
Of course, of course.
I want teams like
Boise State to be competitive
at the end. I want them to play the best teams.
But, I mean, day in and day out, the teams like Boise State and, to a lesser extent, TCU, they cannot compete with the Floridas and the Alabamas and the Texases and the USCs. They just can't do
it. They beat Oklahoma in a bowl game.
That's a one-shot deal.
And they had
a month to prepare for it.
Nobody can compete with Texas. Nobody.
Thank you.
See, he's a nice suck-up.
You're
isn't
a kiss-ass.
Syracuse is such a much better football program.
Okay. Oh. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so Christine Acker just called and said Florida is the way to go, too.
Florida is the way to go, too?
Yeah, right. All right, is Tebow going to play this weekend, Christina?
Not buying that.
Huh? Is he?
I don't think he's going to. I don't think he's supposed to.
I think he will.
If he doesn't play, they're in trouble against LSU. They're in trouble. All right. We've digressed enough about college football.
We always have to talk a little college football.
Well, yeah, because I cover it for a living.
Too.
By the way,
but it's relevant.
That's true.
Of course, it's relevant. It's early draft prep. That's how I look at it.
Absolutely. It's you got to look at who the hot teams are, and when the hot teams, what kind of personnel do these hot teams have? Mm-hmm. Who's draftable? You know, who is a senior? Who's junior eligible? Who's draftable?
Yep.
You know. Next Thursday, a week from today.
Yeah,
I will not be here again because of a college game. But I've got one of the better games of the early part of the season.
Yep, Cincy at South Florida. It's a good.
Oh
good
man,
Big East matchup.
I'm totally psyched for that one. That'll be awesome. Great game.
Boring.
No, definitely
it's not.
Not
Syracuse.
Definitely not boring. Cincinnati.
They don't have a basketball player as a quarterback.
Cincinnati has a quarterback that was high on, and continuing. I heard the little dig at the Greg Paulus there.
I did. That was more a dig at Doctor than Paulus.
Yeah, because
I actually kind of like Paulus.
I took it
because he's
Paulus
because he's a Syracuse wonk. That's right.
He makes that team exciting.
That's how I got your guest yesterday too. So simmer.
Understand? understand. I'm not complaining at all.
Power trip in that room. Over
Tony
there.
Pike. Well, executive producer. Yeah.
Oh, please.
Tony Pike is getting legitimate Heisman Trophy mentions.
Sure he is.
And he should because of the team. And if Cincinnati goes on the road and beats South Florida, I don't think Cincinnati gets beaten this year. And they probably go 12-0.
Yeah,
and
Big East is not a good conference.
Wait a second. This is all relative now, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Are you comparing them to the SEC, or are you comparing them to, say, the Mountain West, or, you know?
I'm comparing them to all the conferences in college football. I don't think they're very
good conference. Wait a second. You're overgeneralizing here, Eric. I don't want to have to take you to school, but you're overgeneralizing, all right? There are 11 football bowl subdivision conferences, all right? 11
mm-hmm.
that play for a, quote-unquote, you know, Division I
right.
okay, team, right? Six of those 11 are BCS leagues.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, of the six that are eligible for the championship game, okay, in BCS bowls, without being, you know, in at large, things like that, I could make a case for the SEC being better. I can make a case for the Big 12 being better. I can't make a case for anybody else being better right now. Top to bottom. Do they have one,
Ten?
The Big Ten? Okay, look at the bottom of the league. Look at the bottom of the Big Ten and tell me you don't think Rutgers or Syracuse right now could measure up because they can.
Syracuse can't measure up to anybody.
I'm going to give Syracuse some love here because they gave Penn State at the top of the league a great game until Penn State wore them out late. And you're talking about the last place finisher in the Big East against the number one in the Big Ten and did not blow them out. If you're number one in your league, if you're Florida and you're taking on Iowa State from the Big 12, Florida kicks their ass 62-0 and should.
Yeah, I'll buy that particular.
What I'm saying about the Big East is that the bottom two or three teams in the league are better than a lot of other leagues' bottom teams.
Sure.
Okay?
Sure.
The top teams may not be on the level of Florida and Alabama and Texas.
That's what I'm comparing, though. I'm not comparing the
but
bottom of
the league. But you don't do that, though. You can't do that. You because have to look at the whole picture of the entire league.
I'm comparing the teams at the top because they're the ones that are in contention for bowl games and for top 25 rankings. And
not everybody in every league is in contention for a bowl game. They have 35 freaking bowl games now.
I mean the important ones.
Well... the important ones. That would be what? The BCS games?
Not just the BCS games.
Throw in the Cotton and the Gator? That's about it, right?
The traditional big bowl games.
Okay. There are about six of them.
I'm not talking about the Copper Bowl in the middle of December. I'm talking about the ones from the end, January 1st on.
Did you hear the story about the Yankee Bowl? Did you see that?
No.
Yeah, the New York Yankees are going to host a bowl game at the new Yankee Stadium.
Yeah, and that's what they're going to call it, the Yankee Bowl?
Well, everybody's calling it the Yankee Bowl because they don't have a...
I did hear that, and did you also hear that the field is not big enough to accommodate it?
Well, they're going to have to do some rearranging. That is correct.
It's 90... They did the measurements, yeah. And it only fits 98 and a half yards.
They're going to have to...
The rest of it goes into the dugout.
They're going to have to knock out part of the outfield. Yeah.
But can they?
They're going to have to. They've already booked Notre Dame and Army and Rutgers and Notre Dame.
Should they not have measured before they booked the teams?
Come on. It's the Yankee way. Are you kidding me? It's going to be the Yank this bowl.
Seriously.
You know? I mean, but, yeah, the Big East, a Big East team is supposed to play a Big 12 team in that game. That's the bowl matchup.
And that's going to be this year?
No, it's starting in 2010. It will not. Yeah, but it'll be
January 20 or yeah, December 20.
But out of all the bowl games, this is the only open-aired Northern Bowl.
Oh God, I hope it snows.
Wouldn't it be great?
I hope it snows.
I hope it snows like a bastard.
It
snows. You know, just let it go. Let it snow. Let it snow.
Yeah,
absolutely, absolutely. It'd be great.
Yankee Stadium. Having a football game. Unbelievable.
All right, we've digressed enough, I suppose. But it's fun talking about college football because it does relate to what we were talking
about.
Sure does. My point, though, was about Tony Pike. Tony Pike continues to roll up in terms of the Heisman Trophy standings. So you take a look at teams like Cincinnati, and all right, what do they have? Well, Tony Pike, I think, is going to be a marketable commodity, and he continues to climb up the forum chart that guys like Mel Kiper have. Marty Gilliard is a stud wide receiver and kick returner who's going to be high on some people's lists. They just said yesterday, Jason, you'd be happy to hear that Mike Williams at Syracuse is going to come back for his senior year, and he may be one of the best receivers in the country.
Who?
Mike Williams.
Who?
Yeah, right. Like he doesn't know.
I know.
The other guy that I wanted you to pay attention to is George Selvey, the defensive end at South Florida.
South Florida, yes. We did some homework on him last year.
Yeah.
Because we weren't sure what his status was going to be. So,
right. George Selvey is a name that you want to look at.
He's a name we remember.
Yeah, and I think Selvey is a guy that could be a solid, if not potentially elite player at the pro level, with the pro regimen around him. That's another one that you want to look at. And so, two pretty good stars, in the game next week that I get to do. I got Tony Pike at QB.
Yep.
And I got George Selvey trying to knock him on his ass.
I'd be interested to get your professional take on both of those guys, just from being able to see them in person.
We'll talk about
watching
it.
On TV. You can get most, but
sure.
Watching in person, you get to see things that you don't normally see. You can get off camera stuff. You can see maybe things that go on the sidelines or in the huddle during timeout.
Absolutely.
So I'm curious to see what you make of that.
We'll most definitely pay a little attention to that. We spoke yesterday on the program about potential running backs because I think we're all in agreement here. Maroney's time is ticking. And because of that, weren't sure what was coming out collegiately, but we looked at the list of potential free agents. Somebody was kind enough to look that up and look at potential free agents.
Yep.
And the one name that just jumps out at me on the list is Ronnie Brown.
Ooh.
Ronnie Brown.
That would be interesting.
That would be huge.
That would be interesting.
Huge, as the saying goes. Mm. It would be huge to go after a guy like Brown. Now, I don't know that the Dolphins – allow him to go off to a team like the Patriots. There would be a lot of payback there. But
and you would imagine he'd be franchised.
You would think. You would think, right?
Yeah.
But if you could make a play for something like that, that would be all right.
Yeah. Who else was on the list?
I have to go back and look at it again. Somebody sent it to me. I'll go back and look it up. Whoever, if you're listening and you sent the list yesterday, send it again because I have it in a different email account. But It wasn't quite as thrilling a list as I thought, but Brown was the one name that really jumped out. There were one or two others that you'd think would be possibilities. I mean, Darren Sproles was on the list, but frankly,
we're not looking for
we're not really looking for that type of back. I mean, I think the Patriots already have someone like that a little bit in Ben Jarvis Green Ellis. So, you know, I just, and he's not going anywhere. So, you know, he could come in, and I look at Green
Ellis.
He's
going to get some snaps this year.
Yeah, and I look at Green Ellis as a potential replacement, you know, as a Kevin Faulk type back anyway. Third down type back could get you some yards, and if you need it, and probably catch a couple of passes out of the backfield and get some speed around the end.
I like
of that
the way
kind of
he
thing.
Runs on first and second down, though, too.
Well, you know what? But he could be in that mix. And if he's in that mix as a tailback, fine. But don't you think you need somebody that is more of a stout presence in the backfield?
Well, let me ask you this. If you could get a running back from the SEC who rushed for 2,000-yard seasons, would you take him?
Yeah.
If you could get a running back from the Big Ten who rushed for 2,000-yard seasons, would you take him?
Probably. Okay. And that's what they took in Lawrence Maroney.
Ben Jarvis Green Ellis has rushed for 1,000 yards twice in the Big Ten and the SEC.
Okay.
Lawrence Boney Maroney.
Thank you, Doctor.
Yeah.
So there's a guy who's proven it in two different conferences, big-time conferences against big-time competition.
Mm-hmm.
And he's proven that he can put up big numbers. And since he's been here, he's done, I'd say, a better-than-average job considering he was an undrafted rookie free agent.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to get snaps this year. I would be surprised if we go a whole 16 games and he's not active and doesn't get carries in at least 6 games.
Aaron sends a note here, and he says two running backs that he wants to look at free agent-wise, Pierre Thomas and Jarius Norwood.
Norwood, I think, would be interesting. A little concern about his injury right now, but Pierre Thomas? I don't really know much about him.
I can't
really give an opinion. But Norwood would be interesting, and certainly Ronnie Brown.
Both of those names, by the way, were on the list yesterday that I looked at that was sent. So.
Mm-hmm.
No one really just kind of like jumped out at me with the exception of those guys. Leon Washington was also on that list.
Again, Kevin Faulk type.
Yeah, I know. I'm not sure. So
not a bad player, but that's not what you're looking for.
That's why I'm really going to be looking hard, I think, at the collegiate crop of running backs just because I think that might be your best bet.
Well, plus a rookie can come in and have an impact immediately running back.
We've seen that.
More so than any other position.
I agree. We've seen that. You know, I don't know. What do you think of Javid Best?
I like Javid Best. I thought he had a great start to the season, but
and then
Cal
all of a sudden,
the whole team has just tanked. So it's kind of hard to put all that blame on him.
Ruined his Heisman Trophy chances.
It did, but I think he's a good back. I think he's worth
I think Javid
watching.
Best would be a one that Patriots fans should take a good hard look at, you know?
Of course, if you're a Patriots fan, you're hoping they pick 32 and would have to make a move to get up to get a guy like Best because he won't be around at 32, I don't think.
They have stockpiled, you know, some picks, and, you know, so it'd be interesting to see how that, you know, plays itself out for next year.
Yep.
But, you know, that's certainly a name that comes with some real intrigue on my end.
I'm psyched for the combine already, John. It's only October. I'm thinking about February.
Thinking about this stuff already. I know. All right, so let's take a look then a little bit more closely at the game because, frankly, that's what we're supposed to do here. But we like to go all over the place. And I keep getting back to the fact that there's just not an aspect of Denver right now that scares me with one exception.
Elvis Dumervil?
Yes, Elvis Dumervil. I just think that, you know, because he's 5'11".
2 sacks a game is a pretty good average.
Yeah, and because he sometimes can dip under, you know, these big linemen because of that size, you know, he's learned how to make his size an advantage rather than a disadvantage playing a, you know, down defensive end or as an outside linebacker, which is really how the Broncos utilize him.
Kind of remind you a little bit, because of the size of and the production of your Syracuse guy with the Colts, whose name is escaping me at the moment.
Freeney.
Dwight Freeney, thank you. Sorry, drew a blank there.
Dwight Freeney.
Senior moment.
Yes, and I think Dumervil is, I think he's...
Similar type player. They might not use him exactly the way that the Colts do.
I think Dumervil has better quickness, honestly. I think he's a faster player.
That's saying something because Freeney's pretty quick.
He's pretty quick, but I think Freeney has a little bit more of... I think he has a little bit more power. And I think Dumervil's got a little more quickness. But, yes, you're right, similar type players.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, you know, and they're gonna flip-flop him. So I think they'll give him a chance to whip Matt Light into submission, And then once they figure out how to, you know, bring a tight end over, I just see that this game may not be the game for the Patriots to find Benjamin Watson a lot, because I think Watson will be kept in blocking schemes most likely.
What about Chris Baker?
Maybe Chris Baker. If you start in a two tight end set, that should open up one door, you would think, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it'll be interesting to see if we get a two tight end set going, then I think, you know, Baker would have to be considered an option, unless they decide they keep Baker back and they send Watson out simply because Watson's shown all of a sudden, ooh, he's got hands. So I guess that could happen. But I think we may see a lot of two tight end sets, Eric, just because I think they're going to have to account for where Doomerville is.
Hit that, and also there's going to be, I mean, you can't rule out the crowd noise factor in Denver. It's one of the loudest places, and it's an open-air stadium, and it's still one of the loudest places you'll play.
How much,
the
then,
NFL.
Do you think, having gone through that experience at New York, could, you know, pay off for them in either using the wristbands or the flip charts this week?
I think we might see the grease board again. With the flip chart on the arm, if for no other reason than to combat the noise, but also because there's such familiarity with the plays, I wouldn't be surprised
That's
if they do
that
again.
That's a great point. Great point. You're absolutely right. They'll probably change things up like they did against the Jets because they were afraid of the Kevin O'Connell factor. So they might change things up because they just don't want Josh to be able to sink his teeth in anything that he's familiar with.
Now, the only downside to that is they do have tape now of the Patriots doing that against the Jets.
Yeah.
So there's at least a little bit of, well, you know, you can put two and two together.
Don't put it past them. The Broncos would be stupid if they didn't take a look at the Jets tape.
But from purely a combating the noise factor, that makes perfect sense.
I totally agree with that. Now the question is, what about Denver's defense have we seen other than Doomerville? You know, are you concerned with? Champ Bailey concerns me a little bit.
Of course.
Right?
Yeah. DJ Williams.
Williams, I think, has certainly got some potential as well. Who's the, I'm thinking I got to look it up now. The other DB back there that
Andre Goodman.
Thank you, Goodman and
Ronaldo Hill is the safety.
Hang on, Brian Dawkins, safety.
Dawkins didn't practice yesterday.
He was on their list.
He didn't practice, and it didn't say. Doc, do you get the injury reports from Stacy?
Yes, he does.
I couldn't remember what the.
Before
injury,
we signed off yesterday, we just had the Patriots.
I think he had two injuries. And if I'm not mistaken, I think he was listed as shoulder and knee or shoulder and ankle.
Wow.
Shoulder and knee then, seems to be ringing a bell with me with Dawkins. So not saying he's not going to play, but he's not going to be 100% most likely by Sunday.
So if they don't have Dawkins on defense and they don't have Buckhalter on offense.
Shoulder and knee.
Shoulder and knee. Okay.
And they don't have Buckhalter on offense, which is looking, because he was seen in the locker room yesterday with crutches.
Yeah, and I don't believe he practiced yesterday.
No,
either.
He did not.
So they're coming in a little bit banged up.
That would
offense.
Be two huge omissions.
Sure. That
huge
means we'd be seeing
omissions.
A lot more of No'Shawn Moreno.
Well, that may not be a good thing either, to be honest.
Right, he's a pretty good back.
Yeah.
He was the best of the backs coming out of this draft, we thought.
Yes.
This past
No'Shawn Moreno? Oh, yeah, I would agree with that. That'd be the kind of guy that you'd like to draft yourself here. Bring him in. Well, that I certainly think that would keep the, you know, I think that would keep the tables turned on the Patriots side. You know, as far as what they have offensively, you have to be concerned with the size you know, of a guy, you know, at wide receiver like Brandon Marshall. I don't know how you can't not be concerned with him. You have to be concerned about his big play capability and see what he did, you know, in that winning touchdown against the Cowboys, changing direction. And I just, you know, he's
part of that is, you know, you have to put a huge amount of blame on Dallas's secondary for not, you know, making the
Dallas's secondary is awful.
I know.
But Marshall has to be the chief concern. But the Patriots have done a good job to this point in time, Eric, of game planning for the other team's go-to guy. I mean, we've seen it.
Michael Jenkins against in Atlanta.
And Tony Gonzalez.
And Tony Gonzalez and Roddy White. All of those guys
were relatively non-factors, although, you know, they did run a little bit. You know, they basically game planned every week for somebody.
Last week it was Derek Mason who had six catches for 77 yards in the first half.
And then
in the second half, one for 11.
One, yeah.
So they made the right adjustments.
They made adjustments on Mason and shut him down.
And, you know, he was really their main threat.
Right.
Todd Heap played but still had the back situation, so he wasn't completely healthy.
Right.
But they were able to shut down.
Well, and I think that's part of the reason why we saw Ray Rice have that 50-yard run in the second half, too.
Yeah, they couldn't stop him.
They couldn't stop him. But, you know, when you stop something, invariably, you know, it's up to the other team to take advantage of what openings there are.
I did the math, and if you take that 50-yarder away from Rice, mm-hmm. he still would have had 53 yards on 10 carries, so that's more than a five-yard
average.
5 yards
per average, yeah.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, it's not pretty good. So, it's very good.
You know, they, like you said, they took away other things, and they were willing to let Ray Rice try to beat them, and I think that was the, you know, it turned out to be the right move. But still, if you try to go after one thing, something else could get you. And but in the Broncos' case, you know, if you take away Brandon Marshall, now you're forcing the rookie, Knowshon Moreno, to try to beat you.
The thing that concerns me the most, then, about Denver and what they present offensively is Knowshon Moreno, if he indeed gets the ball most of the time, which I think we all expect here, if they're able to control, you know, the line of scrimmage, the offensive line's able to control the Patriots' defensive line, and Moreno's runs help set up, you know, plays to, you know, a guy like, you know, Marshall or Jabari Gaffney's in there, or Eddie Royal or whoever it may be that's in there at wideout. That's my main concern. You know, I think you can see Moreno having a decent game simply because the Patriots will be concerned with the receivers.
Yeah, I mean, that on paper, that's how it looks. That if you're spending that much time focusing on the passing game, that the running game is going to open up, and we saw that last week. But I think if New England gets enough pressure on Denver's offensive line, that's going to disrupt the running game as well. I mean, if you know Ty Warren has played pretty well this year, and Mike Wright has been getting some, especially in the last couple of weeks, has been getting a lot of penetration up the middle. You get guys like, you know, Will Fork's back again. He's been playing well, even though he had the ankle problem a couple of weeks ago. He played a lot sooner than I think people thought after he went out of that Atlanta game. So if you can shoot the gaps and get into the backfield against this offensive line, which, you know, I think our friend Mark said yesterday, Mark Johnson from KOA, that the tackles were probably the best part of that line. Mm-hmm. If you can get the penetration against the center and guards, who, you know, aren't terrible, but...
Well, Casey Wiegman, I think, is a pretty good center.
Yeah.
And we've got old friend Russ Hochstein, who backs up at right guard.
Sure. Backs up.
I'm sure we'll see him.
So if the Patriots' front four can get some pressure in on the interior there, I think that could be enough to take away whatever Moreno's going to try to do to them.
Well, I think that's the key to the game. I really believe if they get any kind of production out of Moreno... to take some of that pressure off of a guy like Orton and make it easier for him to find the receivers, then I think Denver is going to be right there. And, of course, if you add to that, you know, turnover factor, which usually comes into play mm-hmm. even more magnified on the road, then Denver can be right there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, obviously in our predictions here, we take it for granted that the Patriots will be, you know, at least revenue neutral, so to speak, as far as, you know, turnovers are concerned. And, you know, we did see the Patriots secondary finally get a pick last week.
Mm-hmm.
Be great to see them, you know, pick off one or two more, or at least force a couple of fumbles.
Well, and I also like to see, and we've been seeing it in the last two or three weeks, there's been a progression in the pass rush. I think they've gotten steadily more pressure against the opposing quarterback each week. And
yes.
So I'd like to see that continue. Because if they can throw Kyle Orton around, I think you can rattle him enough into some mistakes.
And I think
that'll force him into some bad throws and forced throws that might get turnovers.
Best thing to do at Denver, and of course this is good to do everywhere, but the best thing to do at Denver because of that crowd and because it's always been a difficult place for a lot of
sports
teams.
Score first.
Yes.
And score two
first.
Or three times first.
Score, you know, two or three times, you know, in the first half. Score two times out of the first three times you have the ball, whether it's field goal or a touchdown. You know, 10 points, if you put 10 points up in the first quarter, you're in great shape.
And complete your passes, even if they're short, because you don't want that crowd getting the incomplete chant going.
Yeah, because
that is very intimidating.
Yeah.
The 77,000 people
cheerleading.
Screaming
it's cheerleading.
At the same time. I love it. I love it, John. I hope the NFL calls them too, because they're never going to stop.
Did we have any research on that yesterday, by the way?
I'll be there taking notes to make sure.
I know you will.
I think that's one of
as
the...
As well you should be.
I mean,
so the next time we get that call for, you know, cheerleading in our booth, just say, hey, go call Invesco Field, all right? Start with them first.
Next time you get that call, you tell them to call me.
Oh, I will, trust me. Actually, but, you know, it's kind of tough. I mean, you know, it's Stacy calls me, and then after Stacy calls me, then we get a call from the officials. And then they come in to the booth and stand behind us.
Lock the door.
Thinking about it.
Tell Stacy to call me. Don't answer the
phone.
Get
that garbage can lid. You
Rip
can use it
the
against
wall.
The people as well as the snowballs. Yeah.
Do you happen to know what the fine was that they threatened us with? You have any idea?
No, nor do I want one on my watch.
Oh, well, there you go. Do you know what the fine was they threatened us for?
No.
For cheerleading?
No.
$50,000. $50,000.
No fun league.
And I'm when I heard that, I'm like, I don't make that kind of money here.
It's
so
ridiculous.
That's crazy.
It is ridiculous, Bill. I agree with Bill. It's so ridiculous.
It is ridiculous. $50,000.
It's the no fun league.
There's no question. There's no question. Oh, who's Mel talking?
It is another Patriot.
Cheerleading, damn it. It's cheerleading. He's talking about Missouri and Nebraska. Okay, that's fine. Yeah.
And that would be the crowd response.
Yeah, I know. It's true. What are you going to do? What concerns you then about the game? I mean, have we hit on it? What do you think this game is going to swing?
Well, just, I mean, history, John. It doesn't matter who the teams are, who the players are, who the coaches are, who the players are in this series. Patriots at Denver is always a tough matchup for the Patriots.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why, but maybe it's the crowd. I don't think the altitude has really much to do with it. I think the players have all said, too, that they don't have any problem with breathing or anything like that. But
I wouldn't expect them to.
The crowd noise, maybe the old stadiums, whatever it is, there's something about playing in that city that brings out the worst in the Patriots most of the time. I mean, there are a few exceptions, but, you know, one of Brady's worst games in 2001 was that four-interception game he threw at Denver. And one of his greatest comebacks happened to be at Denver, too, the 2 years later when the intentional safety, the touchdown to Givens in the last minute there. But for the most part, you go back to the Elway days, they could never win there. And even recently under Shanahan, it's been a tough place to play. That is always in the back of my mind, the historical part of it's kind of like when we go down to Miami, where for so long the Dolphins play us tough in Miami year after year. You're surprised when you get years like 2007 where they blew them out 48-27 or whatever heck it was. So it's just the venue. That's the biggest thing for me. I mean, the matchups obviously are important as we touched on all the big ones, I think. But it's just that venue. There are just some places that I think are kryptonite to some teams, and Denver and Miami are the two for New England.
Have always been a little bit of a weak link. Yeah,
so,
I think that's the thing that concerns me the most.
And weather looks like it's going to play a factor one way or the other.
That concerns me the most. Fact is that they are playing in Denver, and historically it has not been a great place for the Patriots to play. And if that's all that really concerns me, then I think they're probably in pretty good shape, but you cannot discount that.
Because it's a huge factor, and it's proven year after year when these two teams play. If it's in that city, and even if it's not, even when the Broncos come here, they've last year was an anomaly, I think, the 41-7 game. For the most part, when the Broncos come here, they're equally tough. It's just that franchise, but more so when they're in Denver, for some reason, it's a tougher matchup for the Patriots, but. I think they do have enough going for them in this game that I think they're gonna win by. It might not be this far during the game, but I think by the end that it'll be about 10-point swing.
Okay. Webradio at patriots.com. If you have your score prediction, your thoughts for Sunday in Denver, would certainly like to have those. And we'll share a couple of them here in a little bit. Again, coming up in about 10 minutes, maybe even actually a little less than that. Russell Baxter from ESPN, NFL Research Coordinator, and then Mike Kliss from the Denver Post. You'll be with us at the tail end of the 3 o'clock hour as well, and we'll jump into more of the Denver Broncos stuff. Jason, I need the email thing rebooted again, so I'm going to let you reboot it since I'm not privy to all of that, inside information. Is that all right with you? Okay, that's good. And let's go ahead and take a break here so we can get that up. And as always, thank you. You're headed out with the boys to Denver tomorrow anyway. Or no, Saturday, right?
Saturday, yep. We'll be leaving Saturday. We'll be, as Fred mentioned at the end of the show, we have an event. We have a road event, PFW road event.
That's huge.
At the Poorhouse.
Huge.
The Poorhouse in Denver. I'm not sure the exact start time, but
they don't realize what an appropriate place that is.
Oh, yeah. A lot of double entendre there.
Can I sit next to you on the plane?
Are you coming? Are you really?
How about that?
I already have Andy's big head sitting next to me, I think. But If there are extra seats, we should certainly.
So Andy's big head on one side and Jason's big head on the other is what you're saying.
I promise you, I'd be more entertaining than Andy. I'll bring some movies and stuff. I've never traveled with the team before.
Oh,
5 years.
We have in-flight movies and television on our we're pretty
pampered. Man, this is the NFL. Let's go.
And bring your appetite because there's food on the plane and it's good food.
They bring it on. They cater it on.
They do. We get treated very well.
Nice.
So yeah, but
as long as I'm not sharing a hotel room with Andy, I'm happy.
No, that'll be my albatross that I have to bear. Yeah, but the poorhouse Thursday night, Saturday night in
Denver.
We'll be there. Not sure of the time, but just get there when the sun goes down, and we'll be there eventually.
Very nice. So if you actually want to come see these guys in person,
you're crazy. But if you do, that's where.
What are you guys going to be doing there anyway?
Having people buy us food and drink, I
no
guess.
No way. Seriously?
I guess. That's.
Are you going to be like, you know, signing copies of Patriots Football Weekly or something? Or are you just going to be hanging out? Are you going to be doing a
We
a,
were invited.
TV
drink.
Or radio
we were invited.
Show?
There's a Patriots fan club. I think it's.
We were going to go drink.
Now, thank you, Paul. Settle down. We're not even there yet.
Maybe I just drink to get drunk.
You do. Yeah. You do. Even not to get drunk. You just like to drink. But we.
That's big time.
There's a fan club,
okay,
a Patriot fan club in the Rockies. I think it's called the Pikes Peak Patriots or something like that.
Okay,
and I think they've set this all up and they've invited us to make an appearance.
Very nice.
So we will try to oblige.
Oh man, so you get to schmooze with your peeps.
Yeah,
nice.
Hopefully, Bill from Vail will be there.
Yeah,
see a good one.
He bought us the jackets. Remember those black jackets? We'll be wearing those.
Wow. You should. I mean,
we're going to need to. It's going to be, you know, snowy conditions.
30 degrees there, you know? Could be in the 30s.
So,
wow, that's good. Beautiful.
All right.
That's coming up this, of course, on Saturday night in Denver. All right, we're going to take the time out here, and then we'll come back. We'll get to some emails. Russell Baxter will join us. Mike Kliss from the Denver Post will join us right here inside the Playbook.
At American Airlines, we know it seems like you're on the road almost as much as your favorite sports team. We know you've scheduled a business trip to a city where your team happens to be playing that night. And we know that on every trip, you inevitably forget to bring a toothbrush. But you never forget that old pair of socks you wear on game day to bring your team luck. We know for you, it's not just a seat on a flight to a place. It's a seat on a flight to your life. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
Okay, so to recap, these are last year's sales results, and here's how we stand now. And I need some clutch players who can get us some numbers up on the board. Ted.
Yes, sir.
In the fourth quarter. We've come from behind in the fourth quarter before. Ted.
What?
I need you here in the shotgun. Put on this helmet.
It's a garbage can.
Do it.
But it's dark in here.
Susan.
Yes?
What? You're going to reverse right and then break left at the cubicle.
What?
I am.
Let's go!
Mr. Krevelin?
That was awkward.
Think football? Bank football. Get Patriots banking only from Bank of America. Get the Patriots logo on your checks, debit card, and your Patriots Extra Points credit card. Use Extra Points rewards to get tickets or even stand on the sidelines during pregame warmups. Plus, you get a bonus match on your Keep the Change savings. To get Patriots banking, go to a banking center or bankofamerica.com/patriots.
You got?
Yes.
What?
Yes.
What?
You can take the trash can off now.
What?
Keep the Change patent pending. Credit card programs are issued and administered by FIA Card Services and Bank of America NA member PIC. Copyright 2009, Bank of America Corporation.
Hello?
Well, it's that time of year again where Sunday means you're doing something football. Whether it's tailgating in the parking lot, throwing the pigskin around, or just hanging in and watching the game on the tube, it's all about football. And when you're not watching football or playing football, well, I think we both know you're thinking football. And all that can make you a little hungry. That's why there's the tasty snack wrap from McDonald's. Snack wraps now come in your choice of three flavors. New Chipotle barbecue, honey mustard, and ranch. And they're available with grilled or crispy chicken. Delicious and easy to eat. It's the perfect game time snack. So grab one today. And when you do, if you're looking at that chicken select and it kind of reminds you of a quarterback in the middle of the pocket, except now he's surrounded by cheddar jack cheese, ranch sauce, and lettuce, well, maybe you're thinking just a little too much about football. McDonald's. I'm loving it.
50 seasons of New England Patriots football. 3 Super Bowl championships. Endless memories.
It's good! It's good! Adam Vinatieri!
Live them all at the Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon. Celebrate the greatest players, moments, and teams in Patriots history with sights and sounds that put you right in the action. Step inside the huddle as Tom Brady calls the plays. Go under the hood and review controversial calls just like a replay official. Learn the playbook from head coach Bill Belichick. Take your best shot at a game-winning field goal in the snow and let the confetti rain down while you gaze at the Patriots' three Vince Lombardi trophies.
Back-to-back, 3 out of 4. Yes, it's a dynasty.
And don't miss the 30-foot-high displays honoring the team's greatest players or the signature film showing the history of football in New England. The Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, is located next to Gillette Stadium in Foxborough, Mass. And is open 7 days a week. Call 508-698-4800 for more information or go online to thehall@patriotplace.com. The Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon. An unforgettable, exciting, interactive experience.
Inside the playbook, we're opening up in hour number two here for a Thursday on American Airlines Patriots.com radio. I'm John Rook. Our thanks again to Eric Scalavino from Patriots Football Weekly for joining us in the opening hour of the program, as he does on Wednesdays and Thursdays usually. Russell Baxter coming up here in just a couple of moments. Mike Kliss from the Denver Post will join us also in just a bit as we look a little bit further into the matchup with the Broncos coming up on Sunday in the Mile High City. Let me share with you a couple of emails. Since you've taken the time, why not? Shall we? John sends this email. This is our friend John in South Carolina. He says, the referee crew for the Raven-Patriot game was Ron Winter's group. There is a lot of misplaced anger at the Patriots and Brady because of the questionable calls. I think referring specifically to Terrell Suggs and, you know, at his knees, all that stuff. It says, looking at the calls, unnecessary roughness, roughing the quarterback, unsportsmanlike conduct, Winter's crew has had an increasing amount of these subjective calls. I understand some of this is situational. Tampa Bay commits more fouls than Green Bay, but the calls still seem to be increasing. Now for the question. Does it seem like a lot of calls to have 3 and 4 unnecessary roughness, roughing the quarterback, and unsportsmanlike conduct calls in a game? Especially when you look at it like this crew runs into these calls every week. Chicago, Green Bay, Tampa Bay, give some examples here. Baltimore, New England, yep, see it all. Okay, so does it look, does it seem like a lot of calls to have 3 and 4 unnecessary? I'm not sure I understand the line of the question, John. I think you miswrote it because you don't really ask a question here. Or at least your reasoning isn't clear to me. Other than the fact that it was Ron Winter's group, which we know, it also has been discussed on these very airways as well as, you know, by the national pundits. His group is an officiating group that ranks up there, if not at the top of the list, in terms of number of penalties called. Patriots had to know this going in. They do the homework. They know that if this crew is calling the game, that things are going to get called pretty closely. Patriots were fortunate. I think they did an okay job in monitoring that. Baltimore less so. But when I looked at the replay, and I've looked at the replay in particular of Terrell Suggs' play on Brady, and I've looked at it several times over and over again, and even looked at it, you know, from different angles, thanks to you know, NFL replay on NFL Network. I have to admit, you know, Suggs lunged at Brady from below his knees. End of story. You can't do that. You just can't do that, and you're going to get picked off if and when that happens every time. Now, expect it, of course, to happen potentially to the Patriots on down the line if someone who is prone to the ground, on the ground, what have you, reaches up and tries to grab at the opposing quarterback. It will get called. So while there may be some, as you said, John, misplaced anger at the Patriots, I think there's more misplaced anger at the crew for making a call. It's like, it's football, you know. They're not wearing skirts out there. Well, true, but that is a rule. That is part of the Brady rule that was, in effect, put into place this year. And it's going to get called, and it's going to continue to get called, and perhaps rightfully so. All right, Russell Baxter, ESPN Zone, joining us inside the playbook yet again, as he does on Thursdays.
Yoo-hoo, Baxter!
Great to talk to you again, Russell. How goes the week?
It goes well. How are you? We did not speak last week.
Yes, I know.
You're all playing hooky.
I felt badly, but I was on my way to Morgantown, West Virginia, you know. And it was, you know, one of those things where, you know, hey, work gets in the way sometimes of having fun talking about football.
There's a great show on the Food Network called Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives.
Yes, I've seen it.
Are you familiar with it?
Yes, I am.
And I think there was some fabled, it looked like it was some old bus
mm-hmm.
that someone converted into a great hot dog stand that is, I believe, somewhere near Morgantown.
Yeah, yeah, I know what you're talking about. I think it's.
I know they put a lot of coleslaw on their hot dogs.
Yes, they do.
These giant, giant hot dogs. And I'm sure you indulged, right?
I have actually been by that place. I have not been to it because of the time of day that I usually go by it. Mm-hmm. But I will tell you that I have found a wonderful dive Mexican food place in Morgantown.
Hey, you know, that show is the bomb.
Well,
I love that show. Of course,
yeah,
I don't get to eat any of that stuff. You know?
Well, I think you and I are probably both in the same category. we've long since passed being able to eat a lot of that stuff.
So. No, what we're allowed to do and what we do are two totally different things. So.
Isn't that the truth? Isn't that the truth? Yeah, and by the way, I'll warn you, next week I'm doing the Cincinnati-South Florida game.
Oh, okay. Are you going to venture? You're not going to be near Miami, unfortunately, so there goes your Joe Stone crab. So.
No, I'll be in Tampa.
Oh, Landry's Steakhouse.
Landry's.
See how my life revolves around food?
Landry's is good. Landry's is good. I was thinking, you know, something along the lines of, I don't know, Mons Venus. I don't know. Just kidding. Actually, you know where I like to go? I like to go down to Ybor City. I like to hang out down there.
I know there's a very fabled place in Tampa that I had reservations for last year after the Super Bowl, and unfortunately I had to cancel them the night before, and one of your listeners will correct me. What it is? What is the famous steakhouse in Tampa? Eventually we'll get the football, but who cares?
Yeah, so. I know.
I'll look it up. I
have been there because. Oh, but what the hell was the name? Because I remember I went for a huge sponsor thing about 2 or 3 years ago when the Friars were playing basketball down there, and they said, "Oh, we're going to the steak place in Tampa."
Mm-hmm.
What the hell?
Yeah,
was
I had
it?
To unfortunately cancel last night. Last year. So
where's my friend Irene from Tampa who emails the show because she would know. She would definitely know the answer to that. Okay, we digress, but that's
Burns
food. Is that it?
Burns.
Okay,
that's it.
Burns Steakhouse. Yep, have been there. Absolutely, have been there. I do like Ybor City because the fact is that they've got a great Colombian spicy food place down there called Columbia. You go do a little bit of the Hispanic, the Spanish, and the Portuguese, and everything that's down there. So it's very, very good. And then after you go to Colombia, you walk into one of the many walk-in humidors, where they have things that are like wrapped almost as you watch.
Yeah, I am familiar.
Yeah, and it's really
I am familiar.
It's an excellent, excellent place to go. Okay, anyway.
That's when they smoke it.
That's exactly right, Bill. It's just when they smoke it, precisely. What were your thoughts on the Pats' win over the Ravens last week, Russell?
Well, very workmanlike, for the second week in a row, balanced football, and that's what it takes. No quarterback, and, we talked about it, before the game, before the Jets game and so on, and we talked about it against Atlanta, although Atlanta's defense wasn't anything to get, not to knock them or anything, but they're not one of the better defenses in the league. So you almost got that sense that the Patriots would come out at least and try to establish the run. But you've seen more balance from the Patriots offense the last 2 weeks. Remember those first two games? I mean, right off the top of my head, 43 running plays, 101 pass plays.
Mm-hmm.
Any kind of I don't care. Johnny Unitas, Otto Graham, Terry Bradshaw, you don't win that way. You just make yourself one dimensional. And the fact that they made it so hard, and that listen, Baltimore's defense good but not great. And I thought going into that game last week, I think I talked about it, Chris. I thought more than any other game last week, play calling was the key to that game.
Yeah.
And I think it panned out that way.
I would agree. Now, what a lot of Patriots fans are now probably becoming privy to, Mike Reese from ESPNBoston.com is reporting this afternoon that on his last carry of the game against the Ravens, Fred Taylor injured his ankle, which is going to require some surgery. I don't know if you're aware of that or not.
No. I got the same news from the same exact person, as a matter of fact.
Mike Reese.
Yes, and funny how that works.
Yeah, you know.
ESPN world that we live in.
You're all in the family there.
Yes, we are. And the family keeps growing.
Yes, it does.
Listen, that, you know, you still have Lawrence Maroney back there. You still have Kevin Faulk back there and so on. I mean, Taylor has given them a little bit of a different dimension this season. But, it's how interesting is it? It sounds like the Denver Broncos this week are going to be without Corell Buchholter.
Right.
Who is their kind of, I don't know if he's Fred Taylor and so on, but he's more of a power running type of back than, say, Knowshon Moreno or Lamont Jordan. Lamont Jordan's kind of like somewhere in between those two guys, but Corell Buchholter was always the perfect complement to Deuce Staley or Brian Westbrook in Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm. The Patriots certainly know a little bit about Lamont Jordan, and I think a lot of Patriots fans, quite frankly, are enamored with a guy like Ben Jarvis Green Ellis, who I'm going to assume now with Taylor, who, by the way, in case you're just getting this news for the first time, we didn't really talk about it in the opening hour of the program because we were waiting to hear more details, and now Mike Reese has just come out on his blog with this. The surgery is not expected to sideline Taylor for the whole season.
Mm-hmm.
As long as there are no complications with the surgery, apparently it's a simple procedure. My guess is it has something to do with, you know, cartilage or what have you, and maybe it's just a matter of a couple of weeks. But I think Patriots fans, you know, while certainly, you know, Fred Taylor has impressed and shown clearly he has life left in his legs to what we've seen thus far, Patriots fans really are enamored with Green Ellis. And if they activate him to take his place on the roster, I'm sure Patriots fans will feel like that his loss, as, you know, tough as it may be to take, can be overcome.
Well, this is a franchise that won a lot of games before Fred Taylor was a member of the team.
Very true.
And there's a lot of components that are still there.
Right.
Like we said, Maroney, like Kevin Faulk, if they bring Ben Jarvis, Green Ellis back and so on. Listen, the one beauty of the Patriots is there is a rhyme and a reason to their game plan, even though contrary to sometimes when you watch them play. That's why you can see them run 25 times in a row. That's why you'll see them throw 25 times in a row.
Mm-hmm.
They do whatever. I mean, they are. Bill Belichick has made situational football a part of NFL lingo. And, you know, you even heard it from one of the Broncos wide receivers, Brandon Marshall, last week, quoting mm-hmm. Josh McDaniels. Well, where do you think Josh McDaniels got that from? Situational football.
Right. Right. Very true. All right. Let's begin to kind of look at what we have coming up this week because, again, there are some intriguing games, not the least of which would be Patriots and the Broncos, which we'll kind of save until last. But, you know, the one thing that I think that, Patriots fans are going to continue to look at more carefully, not that they don't already because they do when it comes to divisional opponents, but I think, you know, watching very closely now what the Jets do every week. And now that the Jets have picked up a guy like Braylon Edwards in terms of their, you know, receiving and such, to, you know, maybe give a guy like Mark Sanchez, you know, a big play capability to maybe take a little pressure off of him since his last couple of weeks haven't gone as swimmingly as his first couple of weeks. Jets are still 3-1. So, you know, I sense that a little bit more of this rivalry thing is starting to, get some play between the Patriots and the Jets. And, of course, the Jets this weekend will basically have an opportunity to showcase themselves on your game on Monday Night Football at the Miami Dolphins. Why? Then my question to you is this. Why do I feel like the Dolphins can win this game?
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with their ability to run the football. And, you know, people like to almost portray, and listen, Patriots fans and personnel know this as well, like they almost kind of portray that Wildcat offense as a gimmicky type of thing. And as you well know, it's more about power than it is tricks. And, there's a lot of other – have you noticed that when you watch a game now, if someone snaps a ball to somebody other than a quarterback, immediately the telecaster will kick into Wildcat gear?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know if that's necessarily what's happening.
Yeah,
but we do know in Miami they are running what they call the Wildcat offense and so on. And we saw it rank up big yards against the Colts. We saw it rank up respectable yards against the Chargers. Big numbers against the Bills last week. It is effective and takes advantage of what they do best, and more importantly, takes advantage of what they don't have, which is a load of standout wide receivers down in Miami. Ted Ginn is their premier wide receiver per se, and yet he's very inconsistent. So that offensive line of the Dolphins, which they spent a lot of time in this offseason revamping, especially interior-wise, is why the Miami Dolphins could beat the New York Jets on Monday.
What was your impression of Chad Henne in his debut? Obviously, the Dolphins won the game, so it had to be considered a positive. But is he the kind of guy that can, you know, help this team continue to progress rather than regress after an 0-3 start?
Well, listen, the game plan eventually is to make him the starting quarterback.
That's true.
Chad Pennington, when he signed a two-year deal, and that wasn't one of those salary cap deals. That was one of those you're going to be here two-year deals.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, Chad Henne pressed into the starting lineup for all the wrong reasons. But on the other hand, I think he did just enough, or did basically what he was asked to do. We have seen it so many different times with rookie quarterbacks around the league. We saw it with Matthew Stafford, and we saw it with Mark Sanchez in the early going here as well. Try not to do too much. More importantly, try to limit the mistakes. Right now, as a lot of people know, Jake DeLhomme leads the league in turnovers. Mm-hmm. He has 9 in 3 games. There are 4 quarterbacks who have 7 turnovers in the early going, and both of them, 2 of them, are Matthew Stafford and Mark Sanchez.
Mm-hmm.
So limiting those mistakes is very, very important. You know, nobody comes in here and does it all by themselves. 10-year veterans don't do it all by themselves. But I thought Henne did exactly what he was asked to do. They played very solid defense. I mean, the Bills have obviously a lot of issues and so on. But on the other hand, I thought Miami, after a rough start against 3 quality teams, bounced back and did exactly what they needed to do against the Buffalo Bills.
Do you like them Monday night?
I like the Miami Dolphins Monday night. I think there's going to be a little bit of a letdown theory here for the Jets.
Mm-hmm.
Offensively, I think they really struggled last week. Remember, they only scored 10 points. They had at times moved the ball, but they made the big mistakes. People are starting to get a little more of a book on what Mark Sanchez does now. Now, to me, it's as much to do with it being a desperation game for the Dolphins as well. They have to build on the fact that they are coming off a win. And, despite being 0-3, 3 losses, none of them in the division. They lost to the Falcons, they lost to the Colts, they lost to the Chargers. So to bounce back at 2-3 and be 2-year wins both within the division, that gives them, I think, a little glimmer of hope. I'll just be interested to see how Miami's defense defends Mark Sanchez and the overall attack of the Jets. I will say this about the Wildcat offense. Rex Ryan, remember, is now the new head coach in the New York Jets. Last year, the Baltimore Ravens really had their way with the Dolphins, really sniffed that offense out both mm-hmm. times they played them, including the playoff loss.
Mm-hmm. Very true. I wouldn't normally deal with this game, but because it's a divisional opponent, Browns at the Bills, combined 1-7, going to play on Sunday afternoon. How much longer do you, and personally, and I'm sure this is probably part of the storyline here for even the networks, how much longer does Dick Geron get here? Does Ralph Wilson continue to give him the benefit of the doubt?
Well, I think at any one time, Ralph Wilson could pull the plug. I mean, we saw it in the summer when he pulled the plug on the offensive coordinator, and suddenly Turk Schoner was out as the offensive coordinator. They decided to go in a different direction very, very spontaneously. And, a lot of it that was due to the fact or a lot of the pressure supposedly was coming from the owner, Ralph Wilson. So, a lot of times we hear, we get on, basically on different cases about Jerry Jones or Al Davis or other owners, of Daniel Snyder being very, very meddlesome. I wouldn't say Ralph Wilson's a meddlesome owner, but I think he's become an impatient owner. So I would not be surprised if the Bills continue to struggle, and most of their struggles, of course, come within the division. They've now lost 8 straight games within the division, and you're not going anywhere if you can't at least split in your division every year.
Yep. Yep.
But that being said, the team on the other side of the ball may be even worse shape. They've now lost 10 straight games. In fact, do you remember the last time the Cleveland Browns won a football game?
No, offhand.
Well, it was on
no.
a Monday night at Buffalo last year.
See, how did I know you'd come back around full circle with that?
Yeah, and that was their last win when they beat them. And it's been, and remember, in their last 10 games, their offense has scored 3 touchdowns. Mm. 2 of those came last week in the overtime loss to Cincinnati. This is a team struggling. Now, do they look a little better with Derek Anderson last week? Yes, they do. But now Braylon Edwards is gone, now traded to New York Jets, so the new component's in there. It already seems like it's a rebuilding year in Cleveland. Bills play pretty good at home. This is a game, just like the Tampa game, they're expected to win. But these are the games that get coaches fired if they do not win them. That's what I will say, John.
Yeah. You know, I got to admit, there aren't a lot of great games that I'd really be looking forward to watching this week, with the exception maybe of the Monday game, certainly the Patriots game as well. For some reason, the matchups this week seem to be a little one-sided. For instance, I mean, you've got where do my notes go here? I was looking at this. Oh, you got, you know, the Bucs and the Eagles. You got the Raiders and the Giants. You got the Vikings and Rams, 4-0, 0-4. You know, I'm not sure that, you know, those won't, you know, play, you know, to form. But a game that, to me, that a week or two ago didn't think would mean much, you know, seems to be a pretty intriguing game. And that's the Bengals playing the Ravens. And we've seen how good Cincinnati, or how good Cincinnati is. We saw them in preseason, but how good Baltimore really is. Baltimore, to me, is still one of the, you know, premier teams in the AFC. This is Cincinnati's chance to show that they belong, mentioned in the same breath. If they could get a win on the road at Baltimore, I don't know what that would mean to it, but it would certainly mean a lot.
Well, listen, we go back to the fluke loss that they had against Denver in week one. And I think after that happened, all you heard was, well, only the Bengals could lose a game like that. Well, maybe that's true, but very rarely has that happened. But to Marvin Lewis's credit, you know, let's keep in mind, that's the only game they've lost in their last seven outings. They won their last three games last year. Had the loss in opening, and they've won three straight. And, you know, they went up to Lambeau Field a couple weeks ago. Very impressive on both sides of the ball. Of course, beat Pittsburgh and then followed up with an overtime loss at overtime win at Cleveland. And a lot of people, they had to go to overtime to beat Cleveland. Something to keep in mind is obviously there was going to be a little bit of a letdown after beating Pittsburgh, right, which they hadn't done in Cincinnati in 8 years. So for the comeback and get any kind of a win, I thought was impressive. Now, again, we talk about the division. Cincinnati's playing its third straight game in the division, Pittsburgh, the Cleveland, and now Baltimore. A win here and a 3-0 record in the division, which would include, by the way, two road division wins, then you have to take the Cincinnati Bengals very, very seriously. And let's keep this in mind. Since Carson Palmer has had his share of success against the Baltimore Ravens, he's made 9 starts against them in the 6-3.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, really? Mm-hmm. 6-3. Interesting. Well, you'd have to say that he knows how to perform at a high level against those guys then.
Well, yeah. Remember, last year he did not play in the second game. He played in the opener when their offense did not score a touchdown.
Oh, okay.
But, you know, keep in mind now, of course, T.J. Houshmandzadeh is not there anymore.
Yeah.
But the receiving core, the Chris Henrys, the Houshmandzadehs, the Chad Ochocincos, have always given the Baltimore Ravens a lot of problems.
Yeah.
And now the fact that they have a legitimate, and who would have thought we would have said this a couple years ago, since Cedric Benson's turned out to be a major disappointment in Chicago,
mm-hmm,
they have a viable rushing threat in the backfield to keep people off of Carson Palmer. Now, does Carson Palmer look 100% like the guy who went to the Pro Bowl a couple times? Not really, but he seems like he's getting better every week.
Right, right. The other game that I'm looking at that certainly seems to have some promise, Atlanta playing at San Francisco. The 49ers, whether or not they actually get Michael Crabtree on the field this week, simply because he signed this week, finally. Atlanta, because even though they're, you know, still reeling a bit, perhaps, from a loss to New England, probably anxious to show that, you know, they're still, you know, the Atlanta team that people thought would be competitive this week.
Well, you know, to me this is a battle of last year's up-and-comer against this year's up-and-comer. And, you know, again, Atlanta, you know, had a couple weeks that licked their wounds after the loss in New England. San Francisco comes off of, you know, taking care of business and very decisively. Their defense and their special team scored 3 touchdowns last week against what I think is the worst team in the league. I don't think I'm going on a limb with the St. Louis Rams.
Mm-hmm.
But more importantly, they're now 3-1. They're now 8-3 in their last 11 games. Going back to last year, they've really picked up where they've left off a season ago. And the thing that they've done really, really well this year is take care of the football. They have only turned over the ball twice in 4 games. Now, why do I bring that up? Because no team turned over the football more than San Francisco did last year, John. They had 35 turnovers in their 16 games. So they've gone from 2-4 games a year ago. I'm sorry, 2-4, two turnovers in 4 games. A year ago, they were turning over the ball twice a game.
It's quite a turnaround. Quite a turnaround.
Well, their defense is top-notch. I mean, there's this Patrick Willis guy. I don't know if you heard of him. He's kind of good.
Yeah, kind of.
He leads the team. Well, you hear this. He leads the team in tackles. He leads the team in sacks. He leads the team in interceptions. He's third on the team in knocking down passes. Okay? I mean, he does a little bit of everything. And keep in mind, the last 2 weeks, tough loss at Minnesota, took care of business against the St. Louis Rams, played a lot of that game without Frank Gore, who's it looks like he's going to miss a couple more weeks. He looked like he was their only offensive component. By the way, from what we're hearing, Michael Crabtree will be inactive this week.
Inactive?
Against Atlanta.
Okay. I was just going to ask you, how do you feel about Sean Hill and his development as a quarterback? Because, you know, I don't think anybody really thought that San Francisco would do much, and yet he certainly seems to be adequate.
Well, the one thing on him that you see, and you see the sack numbers that are with him, he seems to be a guy who still lacks a little decision-making, or I should say indecisive more than anything else. So he doesn't have a great degree of offensive weapons. He's got a very, very excellent veteran receiver in Isaac Bruce. Josh Morgan's an up-and-coming rookie. Vernon Davis, who's one, by the way, Vernon Davis, what a great story. A guy who was belittled and probably deservedly so by his head coach, Mike Singletary, on the sidelines last year against Seattle. I'm sure you remember that. That's why every soundbite you is can't win with him, can't win, you know.
Yeah.
And now he's one of the team captains in San Francisco.
That's a good story.
And off to a dynamite start, and maybe we'll finally live up to the potential. Remember, he was the sixth pick in the draft. Not that long ago.
Right.
But they don't have a great degree of offensive, but boy, they play hard. You can make a case that they're as physical a team as they're in the league. Great years they're getting out of Nate Clements. Dre Bly's the veteran at the other corner. We talk about Willis and so on. Their special teams always come to play as well. They find ways to make you uncomfortable, and it'll be very, very intriguing, I think, this week when we see if that defense can handle the balance of the Atlanta Falcons.
I hear your phone going in the background. Do you need to go?
No. So, I finish my shows.
Oh, okay, good. I just had one quick question about the Sunday night game, and I only ask it because the Titans are here next week, and because traditionally they've played the Colts pretty strongly. I can't imagine an 0-5 Tennessee team coming into Foxborough, but, you know, they've got the 4-0 Colts this Sunday.
Yes, they do. The 4-0 Colts, and, you know, take your cases on who's the hottest quarterback in the league. Peyton Manning
has to be Peyton Manning.
300 yards in every game he's played this year, all four of them.
Yeah.
Which I believe is the first time he's ever had four straight in his career. And keeping this mind about what has happened to Tennessee's defense, especially against the pass.
No kidding.
In four games this year, three different quarterbacks have thrown for over 320 yards against them. Last year, it happened twice all of last season. So you got the hottest quarterback against the coldest pass defense in the league. That being said, Tennessee will win 50-7, which we know, but I don't think so. Tennessee seems like they have lost confidence on defense. Everybody talks about Albert Haynesworth not necessarily being there, but what about the loss of Jim Schwartz, their coordinator, who's now the head coach of the Lions?
Right.
Something is really, really amiss there. They're not even running the ball well, and they certainly have a good stable of backs there. That, I will say this, that is the one thing, you know, Peyton Manning has never thrown a touchdown pass on the sidelines, at least one that counted. So now would be the time, and we have seen, you know, we saw with the Miami Dolphins, even though it didn't do them much good, John, holding the ball for 45 minutes against the Indianapolis Colts and still managed to lose, but that's what you got to do against the Colts. Marvin Harrison isn't there, Anthony Gonzalez is hurt, and they got Austin Collins, they got Pierre Garçon. They just keep on mowing along. They're gearing up to be 5-0, I believe, for the fourth time in 5 years. They always seemingly get off to a good start.
Pretty impressive. And while we have a minute or two left here, that leads us to the Patriots at the Broncos. Traditionally a tough place for a lot of teams to play. The Patriots certainly are one of those. But the Broncos are 4-1. Are they a paper tiger?
Well, you mean 4-0, the Broncos.
I mean, yeah, 4-0, surely. But are they a paper tiger? Make them 4-1.
Listen, I think last week, I don't know how good a team they are, but you got to start giving this defense a little credit. And I'll give you it's only 4 weeks into the season, going on five. Here's my favorite stat of the year in the early going. Denver has given up an NFL low 26 points. By the way, the Patriots scored 27 alone last week.
Mm-hmm.
They've given up 26 points total in four games.
Mm-hmm.
They've given up 16 in the first quarter, which means in the final three quarters of four games, they've given up 10 points.
That's amazing, isn't it?
That is astounding.
Yeah.
I don't care who you're playing. I don't care if you're playing, you know, Georgia Tech, USC, one of the new UFL teams. 10 points in the final three quarters of four games is amazing.
Yep.
Listen, this is your classic teacher and pupil matchup. There's a lot of balance that New England brings here, even without Fred Taylor. I don't know if New England will necessarily roll up a lot of points, but I think they'll find a way to control the tempo of this game. And I don't think this is an indictment of Denver, because I don't expect them to go undefeated.
Right.
But I think it's a case of, listen, Josh McDaniels knows what Bill Belichick does. I think Belichick obviously knows what Josh McDaniel does. This is going to be a game of preparation.
Agreed.
But I think the Patriots have just a few too many playmakers. And listen, Denver's not without playmakers themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Brandon Marsh and Tony Scheffler, Knowshon Moreno, and so on. Really intriguing game. But I think when push comes to shove, New England doesn't put a pile of points on the board, but maybe a 2017 win.
I'm going to leave one with you here. I don't know if you knew this or not, but this is the fourth different head coach in the NFL currently that has a Bill Belichick resume. You know, that is a could be considered a protege of Belichick. Against his former proteges in the NFL, Belichick has a record of 8 wins and 4 losses. He is 5-2 against Mangini. He's 2-2 against Nick Saban, who's back in the college ranks now, as we know, and he's 1-0 against Romeo Crennel, who's no longer a head coach.
Right.
But when you take that a step further, 8-4 against those coaches all time. First time he has faced a protege.
He's beaten them all three times.
Yes, 3-0, correct.
Yes, he beat the Dolphins, I was like 23-16. Mm-hmm. He only faced Crennel once, 34-17.
Yes.
And he beat Mangini the first time he played him.
Yes, correct.
Although Mangini then beat him later in Foxborough.
That's
that
also
year,
true.
That year and so on.
That's also
I guess,
true.
Do you guys consider, we were having this debate, Al Groh was with Bill Belichick for 1 year in Cleveland. But I don't really consider him. That's not a knock on Al Groh. We don't really consider him part of the big Belichick tree.
No, actually, you know.
He was more of a Parcells guy.
He was more of a Parcells guy, I think.
Yeah.
Probably
from
the Parcells
tree. He worked with Bill before. You know, it's funny.
Yeah.
He worked with Belichick in Cleveland for 1 year, then, of course, went to New England.
Yep.
For 4 years while Parcells was there.
Was there, yeah.
And then, of course, he followed Parcells to the Jets.
Yep.
And then, of course, in an ironic twist of fate, became the Jets head coach after Bill Belichick declined the offer, right. And so on. And, of course, lasted there 1 year and now has been at the University of Virginia.
Yeah, we don't really look at Groh as being a Belichick guy. I think it's accurate when you say he's more of a Parcells guy.
Yes, I agree. Okay. Good. Well, you just ended that debate. So.
Okay, fair enough. Always great to talk to you. Hey, I'm going to be doing all night on Sunday night this week. So, you know.
I'll be listening because
I'm sure you will.
We know where I am about 11 p.m. on Sunday night.
Where are you on 11 p.m. on Sunday night?
In the car, usually.
Good. Well, then I'll have the producer call you for an interview.
Jason Smith actually let you have his...
Yeah. Well, you know, it's Columbus Day, so it's a holiday.
Oh, I gotcha.
So, you know, he's like, hey, could you do the show this week? And I'm like, ah, sure. What the heck?
Well, listen, I'm not breaking any ground here. I've known Jason for a long, long time.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a good
he's
guy.
One of the more maniacal New York Jet fans.
Yeah, I know.
That you will ever meet in your life.
Well, that's why they.
I work with most of them.
That's why they have to call a Patriot to come in and even the damn thing out.
There you go,
Russell. Thank you.
All right, John. Talk to you next week.
You got it. Thanks, Russell Baxter, NFL Research Coordinator for ESPN, joining us here in the Playbook on Thursdays, as he always does. Do we want to break here before we bring in Mike? Okay, Mike Kliss from the Denver Post is coming up straight ahead. We get to some emails and more right here inside the Playbook.
At American Airlines, we know it seems like you're on the road almost as much as your favorite sports team. We know you've scheduled a business trip to a city where your team happens to be playing that night. And we know that on every trip, you inevitably forget to bring a toothbrush. But you never forget that old pair of socks you wear on game day to bring your team luck. We know for you, it's not just a seat on a flight to a place. It's a seat on a flight to your life. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
Okay, so to recap, these are last year's sales results, and here's how we stand now. I need some clutch players who can get us some numbers up on the board. Ted.
Yes, sir.
In the fourth quarter.
Fourth quarter.
Fourth. We've come from behind in the fourth quarter before. Ted,
what?
I need you here in the shotgun. Put on this helmet.
It's a garbage can.
Do it.
But it's dark in here.
Susan!
Yes?
What? You're going to reverse right and then break left at the cubicle.
What?
I am?
Let's go!
Mr. Krevelin?
That was awkward.
Think football? Bank football. Get Patriots banking only from Bank of America. Get the Patriots logo on your checks, debit card, and your Patriots Extra Points credit card. Use Extra Points rewards to get tickets or even stand on the sidelines during pregame warm-ups. Plus, you get a bonus match on your Keep the Change savings. To get Patriots banking, go to a banking center or bankofamerica.com/patriots.
Is it gone?
Yes.
What?
Yes.
What?
You can take the trash can off now.
What?
Keep the Change patent pending. Credit card programs are issued and administered by FIA Card Services and Bank of America and a member PIC. Copyright 2009, Bank of America Corporation.
Hello?
Well, it's that time of year again where Sunday means you're doing something football. Whether it's tailgating in the parking lot, throwing the pigskin around, or just hanging in and watching the game on the tube, it's all about football. And when you're not watching football or playing football, well, I think we both know you're thinking football. And all that can make you a little hungry. That's why there's the tasty snack wrap from McDonald's. Snack wraps now come in your choice of three flavors. New Chipotle barbecue, honey mustard, and ranch. And they're available with grilled or crispy chicken. Delicious and easy to eat. It's the perfect game time snack. So grab one today. And when you do, if you're looking at that chicken select and it kind of reminds you of a quarterback in the middle of the pocket, except now he's surrounded by cheddar jack cheese, ranch sauce, and lettuce, well, maybe you're thinking just a little too much about football. McDonald's. I'm loving it.
50 seasons of New England Patriots football. 3 Super Bowl championships. Endless memories.
It's good! It's good!
Live them all at the Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon. Celebrate the greatest players, moments, and teams in Patriots history with sights and sounds that put you right in the action. Step inside the huddle as Tom Brady calls the plays. Go under the hood and review controversial calls just like a replay official. Learn the playbook from head coach Bill Belichick. Take your best shot at a game-winning field goal in the snow and let the confetti rain down while you gaze at the Patriots' 3 Vince Lombardi trophies.
Back-to-back, 3 out of 4. Yes, it's a dynasty.
And don't miss the 30-foot-high displays honoring the team's greatest players or the signature film showing the history of football in New England. The Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, is located next to Gillette Stadium in Foxborough, Mass. And is open 7 days a week. Call 508-698-4800 for more information or go online to thehall@patriotplace.com. The Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon. An unforgettable, exciting, interactive experience.
Patriot Place in Foxborough is New England's premier entertainment, dining, and shopping destination. Experience the Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, an interactive museum dedicated to the history of New England football. The family will want to check out the latest summer movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe, or a concert or comedy show at Showcase Live, shop retailers, and the region's only Bass Pro Shops. And of course, there's always dinner and drinks as you dine outdoors overlooking Gillette Stadium. Experience world-class medical care at Brigham and Women's Mass General Healthcare Center, located on-site at Patriot Place. The region's only 4-star hotel, the Renaissance Hotel and Spa, offers luxurious accommodations, including the ultimate in pampering at Spa Epoche. Special events are always happening at Patriot Place, from Rock the Plaza every Saturday and Sunday, to the Kids Club Storytime every Tuesday, to the area's largest classic car display. Patriot Place is located in Foxborough next to Gillette Stadium, and parking is free. Visit patriot-place.com for complete store and restaurant hours and event listings. Patriot Place. Shop. Dine. Enjoy.
Welcome back inside Patriots Playbook as we roll along here in hour number 2. And joining us on the line is Mike Kliss, who covers the Broncos for the Denver Post. And he joins us here inside the Playbook. Mike, John Rook here in Foxborough. How are you today?
Good, John. Thanks. The weather turned overnight here. Very cold, rainy. We had some we had a little snow flurries at opening of practice.
Woo-hoo!
So, And Josh McDaniel's bringing this New England way. He doesn't practice in the indoor bubble. This is outside, which, you know, so thanks a lot, Bill Belichick. Here, us media guys had to watch practice outside.
But,
So anyway, I think it's going to be a little nicer for Sunday. It's supposed to be dry. I think the high is 40, and it's supposed to be dry, so I guess the whole, if it's 40 and wet, it's miserable. If it's 40 and dry, you'll take it.
You know what? I mean, you guys are kind of like us. I mean, you know, we kind of get used to the whole 40 and wet stuff anyway. So if it's 40,
right, exactly.
You know, if it's 40 and wet, so be it. Both teams have to play in it, but it's just a little bit odd to see, you know, today's October 8th on the calendar, and we're already talking about flurries, you know?
Yeah, I know, and we actually had some on September 21st out here. It's just, and then in between, we've had 75 to 85 degree days. It's how it is out here in Colorado.
Yikes!
So, but it is interesting that Josh McDaniels brings this tougher mentality. It's, I say he brought East Coast football to the West, and that, you know, everyone out there, really, not just the Patriots, but the Eagles and the Giants and. Seems like everyone who plays out east is kind of a rough, tough, rugged, physical type mentality to their football team. And you know, Mike Shanahan was about finesse. He practiced these guys practiced in shorts and shells during his 14 years. And veterans got the afternoon off and those 2-a-days in training camp. And it's been full pads and a lot of contact and a whole different mentality, which as much as anything to me explains. The 4-0 start.
Really, you know, I was just going to ask that, and I find that your you know statement about Josh and his attitude is not strange, but I find it interesting only because you know we've seen a couple of other former Belichick now proteges go on and make their way to some mixed results, and you know while. Right. I get the impression that, obviously, Denver has always been thought of as more of a finesse team in the past. You really feel like that there's been more of a smash-mouth mentality since Josh has arrived?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. It's and you see it on defense. First of all, he brought over the 3-4 defense from Bill Belichick. And within that 3-4, I'm going to guess, you know, I know with the Broncos, and I'm going to – The Broncos have been very aggressive in attacking with that 3-4 defense. It's not a hold a point of attack. It's get upfield type of defense. And I'm guessing they've been a little bit more aggressive than what Bill Belichick's 3-4 does. You know, Josh has said that their defenses aren't quite the same. Their offenses are identical, but their defenses are a little different. So I'm gonna guess that what's particularly different is that the Broncos have been, you know, incredibly aggressive. You know, it seems like they have 5 or 6 guys rushing on every play, and then it also seems like they have 5 or 6, 7 guys in the backfield covering and swarming to the ball. It's, you know, all the good defenses, it seems like you got 13 guys on the field, and that's the way it's looked for the Broncos so far. And then offensively, it's been that New England ball control. That, you know, Kyle Orton doesn't get the ball downfield, hit those seam routes like Brady can. So it's been more ball control on the offense. But it's been they've run the ball well here.
Yes, they have.
You know, a good power running game, and they've kind of worked hand in hand. The way the offense has played has kind of helped set up the defensive play. So yeah, I would say. That's been the most startling difference to me is that, you know, this is a team that went up against the Dallas Cowboys, which is huge, probably the biggest team in the NFL. And, you know, the Broncos were pushing the line of scrimmage in the second half last week.
Is the offensive line still utilizing cut blocks like they have in the past?
Not as much. It's more New England running style, which is more that power, not the one cut, but you get the ball and you're going straight ahead. You know, I was talking to McDaniels on the side, and he says this was last week. And he said he has his running backs do it a little differently than running backs on other teams, and maybe the Patriots there do it the same way.
Mm-hmm.
But you know the old run the daylight that Vince Lombardi made
right.
So famous,
sure.
That saying?
Yeah.
He told me if it's dark, we have them run into the darkness anyway.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in other words, if there's nothing there, we don't want you bouncing outside and tiptoeing and trying to pull a Barry Sanders and wind up with a -5-yard loss. We want you getting the ball up there, and if you only get 1.5 yards, then, you know, we'll take 2nd and 8.5 versus 2nd and 12.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of said, you know, he should call it Run to Darkness.
That's very true. It would also explain a lot on our end, Mike. It would also explain a lot on our end, the troubles that Lawrence Maroney is having.
Yeah, he might not be. You know, it's interesting about Maroney. You know who loved him coming out of that draft?
Was Josh.
It was Mike Shanahan.
Oh, Shanahan did. Oh, no kidding.
Shanahan loved Maroney. In fact, he told me after that on draft day afterward, he said, if I'd have known New England was going to take him, I might have taken him. That was the same draft. Was it the 06 draft? I think it was the same one they took Cutler.
Yeah.
They moved up and took Cutler. But he really wanted, in that draft, he really wanted Maroney.
Wow.
And he was disappointed that New England took him at 15, number 15 overall. I think he was.
You want to make a trade?
I know. We've already done that, by the way.
Yeah, okay.
Maroney, I guess the point, what you're saying there is, and what we're saying is, Shanahan saw Maroney as a one cut back.
Yeah.
And maybe he's built more for that one cut style than he is
New
England style.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're absolutely. I think you hit the nail on the head, and that's really interesting that Shanahan liked him, because there's no question that I think he is more cut out for that kind of an offense, because he's not going to get done here, which makes this weekend even more interesting. Because I don't know if you saw the story, but Fred Taylor looks like he's going to have a little ankle surgery, so he's going to be out for a while.
Yeah, that's tough for the New England Patriots. I know. And on the flip side, the Broncos won't be with Kurell Buckholder.
Yeah, we figured as much. Yeah.
Yeah, he's not going to play. So, I guess everyone's back to their number two, which would mean Maroney for you guys,
yep.
And no Sean Marino here.
Yep, or Maroney and I would say a combination of Maroney, Sammy Morris, and probably Ben Jarvis Green Ellis, who most likely will make the active roster this week as an extra running back. Be my guess anyway.
Yeah, we saw plenty of both of those latter two backs last year,
right?
In New England,
sure.
And a Monday Night Massacre,
right?
Sammy Morris went off for 130, I think, in the first half, and Ben Jarvis Green finished it off in the second half.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when New England, we thought Josh and New England was all pass, and then they did that against the Broncos, and that was a big reason why. Was one reason why. You know, the Denver Broncos wound up with Josh McDaniels, and you lost them.
That's exactly right. So we probably, have you guys to thank for that, so to speak, in a roundabout way, I suppose.
Well, I've said out here that the Bronco fans should give Belichick a standing ovation when he comes out, for creating a coaching monster here. I know we're all getting carried away. It's four games and all that kind of stuff, but. You know, in the media, we reserve the right to get carried away.
Well, that's how you sell papers, and you get hits to websites and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, you got to do that. That's exactly right. All right, so now that you got this 4-0 start, there has to be one aspect of the team other than perhaps the physical style of play that you've mentioned that maybe Josh brought with him from the East Coast. What has impressed you the most overall on both sides of the ball? One thing on the offense, one thing on the defense.
On offense, it is a well-schemed, well-designed, offense as far as, and I know you're used to seeing this, but we're seeing this intricate pass routes where it looks like they're running the basketball three-man weave. Everyone's cutting off each other, and it's short passes, but these guys are wide open. I haven't seen so many wide open, usually if you connect on an 8-yard pass, there's a guy draped all over him, and there's a couple of defenders. These guys catch the ball, and 6 yards beyond the line of scrimmage, and they can turn around. There's no one there to hit them for a while.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what's impressed me, I think, on offense. On defense, I mean, I don't know where to start. I mean, this was a defense that ranked 30th the last 2 years, and now they're number one in four games.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll give you one thing that's a little different that I think is the key to this defense, and that's Brian Dawkins. Why the Philadelphia Eagles let him go, I don't know. He's banged up right now. He's missing practice again today.
Mm.
I'm sure he'll be out there on Sunday. But the presence of Brian Dawkins, the emotion, the passion, the leadership, and not only that, the guy can still play, and he still has range. I mean, he's really shown some good speed back there. He's somebody you don't appreciate on TV. You have to watch him live. You have to watch him from on top of the press box. to appreciate how much presence, how much he brings to a football team, apart from, you know, the normal stats that you'll get on the stat page.
Mm-hmm. I would tell you that the other thing that's impressed me is the continuing improvement of being a forceful player, being a disruptive force on the defense is Elvis Dumervil. I mean, and the fact that you you know, you flip-flop him on the line a little bit, which I'm certainly has probably kept Matt Light and Nick Kazier up a little bit this week because you're not sure which, you know, guy he's going to end up going against. But the fact is, he'll probably go against both of those guys on Sunday. So I think they've utilized, you know, his ability to wreak havoc pretty well.
You know, that 3-4 defense has really helped make some players. I mean, James Harrison of the Pittsburgh Steelers was a guy who was cut, what, 3 or 4 times before he finally caught on?
I think that's right.
And he became that perfect 3-4 hybrid outside linebacker defensive end.
Mm-hmm.
Elvis Dumervil, because of his size, he's 5'11", 250, got very long arms. And as a matter of fact, he and Lakeven Smith had one of those the arm contests the other day.
Yeah.
Where Lakeven's 6'3", 6'4", and he stood across from Elvis, who's 5'11", and they stuck out their arms, and Elvis pushed Lakeven over.
Wow.
Or pushed him back. So
he plays a lot bigger than he really is.
Exactly. In fact, you'll watch him. He's one of the best bull rushers. I would even say he's got to be the best bull rushing pass rusher in football right now because his size helps him with leverage. And his size and his long arms, and he's got such a lower core strength to him that left tackles, I agree with you on the tackles of the Patriots. It's going to a tackle alone cannot block this guy because he's too quick for him, and he's what the tackles don't realize, he's also stronger than them. So and he's got the technique. He's got all three. So I'm sure the Patriots are going to be chipping him with one of their backs as he comes in.
Well, not only one of the backs, I think I fully expect to have, you know, a tight end. Maybe see some two tight end sets where you have a guy like, you know, Benjamin Watson or Chris Baker, you know, helping out on a guy like Dumervil no matter where he is in the ball.
The other thing you do against a guy like that, of course, is you run at him.
Mm-hmm,
and,
true.
You know, I'm true. Sure. I'm sure the Patriots will do something like that, too.
I would imagine. I think that's a very good point. Just a kind of interesting question here that I've been wondering about. Again, Mike Kliss from the Denver Post with us here inside the playbook. A lot of former Patriots, and I guess we can understand why, guys who have certainly been in New England for a while with Denver, probably some familiarity to do with the head coach at all. But of the guys that I've been able to at least come up with off the top of my head, Daniel Graham, I know you have Russ Hochstein on the offensive line. You have Lamont Jordan, you know, at running back. You have Jabbar Gaffney at receiver, and that's on offense. Defensively, you mentioned Lakeven Smith. I thought there was one
he's
other.
He's hurt, by the way.
Oh, yeah, is he hurt?
He's been hurt, yeah. And he's been in and out of the lineup. He got a knee right away. I think the first week he was here, a very first preseason game, he suffered a knee injury, and we haven't seen him too much. I think he dressed for one game.
Wow.
And then Lonnie Paxton, I think, is the
Paxton.
Other guy.
Yeah, there you go. This guy who's the long snapper, right.
Those type of guys, it's funny, they're all role-type guys. They're all guys who believe in the team before self.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting that of all the guys he could have plucked from the Patriots, I do think it is interesting the players he did pick. They're all guys, you know, who understand roles, who understand the greater good. And it's all about the team, and that's where happiness comes in the National Football League is through victory on Sunday. And I think you know when your team's 4-0, every decision looks smart. But
sure.
That was another one.
Sure.
The type of players he brought over.
Oh yeah, one more here. Brandon Gorin is former Patriot as well. But of those guys,
exactly.
Who do you feel like has had the most impact? I mean, is it obvious? Is it a guy like Graham, or is it somebody who's a little bit more unsung?
Well, yeah, I would say Graham, although Graham was here before, obviously.
Right.
Josh didn't bring over Graham.
Correct.
So the Broncos paid big bucks to get over Daniel Graham because they thought he was the best blocking tight end in football. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, you kind of paid him left tackle money is how you justified the contract there. And that's what those type of tight ends do anymore. He would because he plays the most. And then Jabbar Gaffney has been very instrumental in so many ways, just because of his knowledge. You know, that offense that we've been talking about, probably the toughest in the last position to pick it up were the receivers, because it is so intricate with their pass routes, and there are so many reads that they have to make, and it's so timing, and they've all talked about, you know, even the Brandon Stokely's, but Brandon Marshall has talked about this, that Jabbar Gaffney has been an invaluable, you know, coach player for this team and helping him learn the new Josh McDaniels system.
No kidding. That certainly seems to me, I mean, to have a steadying presence like a guy like Graham and then a couple of offensive linemen, a guy like Hochstein, who they really valued around here, but for some reason or another, they decided to go a little bit younger with some of the tackles they had just recently come into. Was glad to see a guy like Hochstein actually land on his feet, especially with somebody who's familiar and knows his capabilities.
Yeah, and he started at two different positions already. He started at right guard in the opener for Chris Cooper, because Cooper had an ankle sprain. And he started last week at left guard for Ben Hamilton. And I know, in New England, that's a very familiar story.
Sure, sure. Because, well, he played all up and down the line, yeah.
Yeah, he played everywhere. And he comes in on the goal line packages. I'm not sure how much fullback he played out there, but he's on all the short yardage. He's the fullback.
Right.
And so it's and again, McDaniels has got guys that he knows, he knows, understands him and understands what he wants from his offense. And it's been really interesting, the type of players he's brought over.
I guess the one thing that the Patriots fans are really going to notice about the Denver Broncos when this game kicks off on Sunday is the fact that Denver's 1960 uniforms that they're going to wear as part of this AFL legacy game, they are hideous. Just,
yes, they are.
Just hideous.
I wonder if you can play well in mustard and gold or mustard and brown.
You're getting ready to find out. Is this the first time you've worn them this year? Where did I see them before then? Because I remember seeing them somewhere on video. Have they broken these out before?
Nope. Not that I know of.
Maybe it was a picture I saw, but how else would I know they're hideous? But, I mean, brown helmets, numerals on the side, mustard gold, brown jerseys, brown pants, and then you've got vertical striped mustard and brown socks. Oh, my Lord.
Yeah,
wow.
Daniel Graham wore the socks yesterday.
Oh, I know what I did. Some sort of a pictorial, and it may have been you guys that ran it, and I saw it online, and I saw photos of the pictures, and I'm like, oh my Lord.
And they really look bad, because they were still wearing their orange and blue practice pants and jerseys. So there was quite the clash there with the mustard yellow and brown socks, along with the orange and blue pants and jerseys.
I don't think want to watch this. You don't want to watch this game in high def.
You know, I wish they would have gone back to the Orange Crush type uniform. I mean, I look back at that, and that's outdated, and you know, no one liked that orange anymore.
Right.
But you know, it was these. You know, and consequently, everybody loves that old Minuteman logo that the Patriots.
Oh yeah,
have.
Pat Patriot is a huge hit. He's he's retro all the way, and the sale of the old red jerseys around New England, hot as pancakes. You know, they're really going well.
The funny thing is, Jim Sacramento, the PR guy out here, told us that these, as bad as these 1961 jerseys look, they are flying off the shelves here, too.
Wow. Well, that's good. You know what, then? That's why you do it. That's why you do it. You know?
That's exactly why
fans,
they're doing it.
Fans love it.
Your fans love it, and for the NFL, you gotta give a little jolt to the merchandise sale. And, you know, you can only sell so many Tom Brady jerseys before everyone's got one.
Right.
So you try to mix up the look a little bit and do it all, or try to sell a new batch.
Mike, when did the Broncos start wearing those orange jerseys with the D logo and the Bronco on the side of the helmet? When did they start wearing those? Do you know?
No.
Was that 70s?
I could look it up for you.
That's all right.
I think I remember it in the late 60s.
Okay.
I think I remember Floyd Little wearing the
see, I thought so too.
That orange in the late 60s. He was drafted in 67.
Yeah, that's what I thought. So, I thought that late 60s would have been involved, which to me would have been the obvious, you know, thing for the Broncos to wear if it was a legacy game, right? Yeah.
This mustard yellow, mustard gold, brown was very short-lived. And I think after you see him, you'll understand why.
No doubt.
I think they only wore it for at most 2 years.
No doubt. No doubt.
And I think the vertical stripes are only for 1 year.
Oof.
And you know, we've made fun of it, you know, in periodic pieces. You know, anytime you want to insult the Broncos or take a little jab at the Broncos, you know, over the years you mentioned the vertical stripe socks, and now they're coming back. So we'll see if they can bring a little bit more success to that look than it was the first time they wore them.
There you go.
They weren't very good. They weren't very good when they started off.
Mike Kliss covers the Broncos for the Denver Post. Mike, thanks for the visit. Sure appreciate the time.
You got it.
Thanks.
Yeah.
All right, so there you go. Mike gives you the inside scoop on the Denver Broncos. And before we wrap it up, B-Lo is in the house.
What's going on, John?
What's happening, Brian?
You know, same old stuff.
Yeah?
Yeah, just winding our way through this week and quite the intriguing matchup.
It is quite the intriguing matchup. So you want to give us the lowdown on Patriots today before you give us the lowdown on Fantasy Lowdown?
Sure. You know, well said. The Patriots Patriots today, we're going heavy Broncos.
Yep,
you know,
yep,
yesterday
yep.
We really went in depth on the McDaniels, Belichick end of things.
Right.
You know, kind of got that head coaching nonsense out of the way. I shouldn't say nonsense. It's kind of intriguing. They got so many former Patriots on that team, not including the head coach.
We just got to talk about that. Yeah,
heard
with
you guys
Mike,
talking
yeah.
about. But, right. You know, kind of trying to figure out, you know, is this a legit 4-0? They're a couple of fluky plays away. One fluky play away from a loss. And I mean, their defense seems to be legit, much improved, and just trying to assess why that is, how that is, what's Kyle Orton really been doing. So getting into in-depth on that and touching on a few other practice notes and things like that.
All right. Anything special for the lowdown today?
Yeah, we'll be catching up on some of the late, you know, all the news of this week and kind of trying to go in depth on this trade with Braylon Edwards because, you know, a trade like that happens and it doesn't just involve Braylon Edwards. It involves, you know, the quarterback of the Jets, the quarterback of the Browns, other wide receivers on the Browns, other wide receivers on the Jets. So
right.
Trying to figure out, you know, who do you give the up arrow to? Who do you give the down arrow to? Going through some of the late injury news and how that affects fantasy. And we'll be talking to Jamie Eisenberg from CBSSports.com.
Excellent. Don't down arrow, I think, on Fred Taylor this week.
Down arrow on Fred Taylor, it looks like, based on, I'm sure I know you were talking about that. The reports are not good on Fred Taylor and the reason why he's been not at practice the last couple of days. So
we figured all that
but,
out.
But, you know, you get news like that. Does that mean up arrow for Maroney and Morris?
Maybe.
Does it mean up arrow for Patriots? You know,
Ben Jarvis Green Ellis
might be active for the first time. Probably
right.
will be.
That's
yeah.
right. All right, B-Lo. We'll be listening.
All
right,
thanks.
All right, Brian Lowe and Fantasy Lowdown coming up here in just a couple of moments. Good show today. Thanks, Jason and Brian and everybody who put this one together. We had some good guests this week. Great insight from Denver. Great input from the fans, as we always get from you guys. The Patriots and the Broncos, 4:15 Eastern time, the kickoff on Sunday from Invesco Field at Mile High. And then we're right back here in the playbook. Same patch time, same patch channel next Tuesday, kids.